see. The path that I have chosen now has led me to a wall. And with each passing day, I feel a little more like something dear was lost. It rises now before me, a dark and silent barrier. Pass beyond is what I seek. I fear that I may be too weak, and those of you who've seen it through to glimpse the other side. The promised land is waiting, like a maiden that is soon to be a bride. The moment is a masterpiece. The weight of indecision in the
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 3rd, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Our access code is 449-389#. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send it to questions, it's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be in John chapter 19. Gospel of John chapter 19, verses 1 through 15. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe and said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they smote him with their hands. Pilate therefore went forth again and saith unto them, "Behold, I bring him forth to you, that ye may know that I find no fault in him." Then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate saith unto them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests, therefore, and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." Pilate saith unto them, "Take ye him, and crucify him, for I find no fault in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again unto the judgment hall, and saith unto Jesus, "Whence art thou?" But Jesus gave him no answer. Then said Pilate unto him, "Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee, and have the power to release thee?" Jesus answered, "Thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore he that delivereth me unto thee hath the greater sin." And from henceforth Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, "If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar." When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus forth, and sat down in the judgment seat, in the place where is called the pavement, but in the Hebrew tongue, Gabbatha. And it was the preparation of the Passover, and about the sixth hour, he saith unto the Jews, "Behold your king." But they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate saith unto them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priest answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Gospel John, chapter 19, verses 1 through 15. Okay, we're going to be looking tonight at a memorandum concerning United States Code Title 18. Now, I know we've spoke about Title 18 before, but I don't believe we actually read the memorandum. So we're going to look at that memorandum tonight. It's kind of a short one. I don't think it's going to take much more than maybe 10 minutes to read through. So if you want to follow along, you can find this. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight the grand jury, come down and click on Action Against the Judiciary. And on that page, down a wee bit, you'll find some memorandums. They're down towards the bottom, as a matter of fact. And you should be able to find, I think it's the second one. Yep, second one, Memorandum, USC Title 18. So anybody wants to follow along, that's where you'll find it. All right. Memorandum of Law, United States Code, Title 18. The purpose of this memorandum is to serve notice upon the judiciary that they have no authority to prosecute people under United States Code, Title 18, the criminal code, and that any attempt to prosecute the people under said title would be an act of high treason. United States Code, Title 18, is not the law of the land. Title 18 is maritime and territorial jurisdiction. In 1948, an act of the 80th United States Congress, in collusion with the judiciary, the Department of Justice, and the American Bar Association, and others, conspired to conceal our courts of justice by using Title 18 to supplant the law, by claiming it to be the law of the land and claiming its jurisdiction to be a court of record, with stacked grand juries and mock pedigrees. The conspiracy is revealed within the title, where we read, United States Code, Title 18, Subsection 5, United States defined. The term United States, as used in this title in the territorial sense, includes all places and waters, continental or insular, subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, except the Canal Zone. Chapter 1, General Provisions, United States Code, Title 18, Subsection 7, Special Maritime and Territorial Jurisdiction of the United States defined. The term Special Maritime and Territorial Jurisdiction of the United States, as used in this title, includes 1. The high seas and any other waterways within the Admiralty and Maritime Jurisdiction of the United States and out of the jurisdiction of any particular state. 2. Any vessel registered, licensed, or enrolled under the laws of the United States. 3. Any land reserved or acquired for the use of the United States. 4. Any island, rock, or key containing deposits of guano. 5. Any aircraft belonging in whole or in part to the United States. 6. Any vehicle used or designed for flight or navigation in space. 7. Any place outside the jurisdiction of any nation. 8. Any foreign vessel during a voyage having a scheduled departure from or arrival in the United States and military or other United States government missions or entities in foreign states. All courts operating under the United States Code are inferior courts whose jurisdiction are limited and special and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts are courts under United States Code 18 whose jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Historical and revision notes. This section first appeared in 1909, Criminal Code. It made it possible to combine in one chapter all the penal provisions covering acts within the Admiralty and Maritime jurisdiction without the necessity of repeating in each section the places covered. In several revised sections of Chapter 11, the words "within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States" have been added. Thus, the jurisdictional limitation will be preserved in all sections of said Chapter 11 describing an offense. Title 18's positive law citation contradicts its legislative construction statements, whereas both were enacted on the same day. Nevertheless, USC 18 jurisdiction applies to the law of the sea and not the law of the land. See aforesaid Title 18 jurisdiction. The Act of June 25, 1948, which enacted Title 18, clearly stated that no inference, which means in fact not real, of a legislative construction, which means law, should be construed. In other words, Title 18 is in fact not real law. Thus, Title 18 of the United States Code, entitled Crimes and Criminal Procedures, only defines a contract with individuals within the naval, marine, and territorial jurisdiction, and is thereby in an administrative process where its violations are to be heard in a nisi prius court. Therefore, an individual is to agree before the court can proceed, and the concealing of such a fact is fraud. In our republic, common law is the law of the land by which we, the people, chose to be judged when we assumed among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled us. We, the people, further declared that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Obedience to the Constitution is the extent of that consent, and no judge and no Congress can alter that which we the people ordained. To alter is high treason. Because people are both ignorant and deceived as to what the law is and its purpose, they are surprised to hear that liberty is freedom from all positive law. Some will say we need law in order to live in a society, and thereby they ignorantly accept punitive law. The fact of the matter is the people are social by nature, and man by nature acknowledges nature's law, and usually behaves in public. Therefore, people do not need legislation to control their behavior. We already know thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not injure another. Simply put, do no harm. These are the laws of nature's God, and the purpose of common law, courts also known as courts of justice, when they injure another. It is here where people are judged by their peers and not bureaucrats. People do not need a bureaucrat involved in the controlling of their behavior. If an individual wants to use cannabis for medical purposes or even recreational purposes, what business is that of a bureaucrat? Even if an individual wants to use a controlled substance which can destroy their life, this is their decision. We cannot save people from themselves. As President Dwight D. Eisenhower said, "We have never stopped sin by passing laws, and in the same way, we are not going to take a great moral ideal and achieve it merely by law." And where do we stop? Do we arrest people who drink alcohol, smoke cigarettes, eat too much, consume too much sugar, have unprotected sex, have homosexual relationships, spank their children, refuse to take the flu shot, refuse to inoculate their children, refuse medical aid, etc., etc., etc.? As Thomas Jefferson said, "I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery." Liberty, the most misunderstood concept, demands that we do not permit the state to legislate our behavior. Freedom from man's law and restrictions is an unalienable right which cannot be sold or transferred. Civil law and criminal law are the decree by the will of men as the embodiment of the state, and as a result makes us a subject to the state and not a subject or child of God. Eventually, it always becomes a money-making exploit and always expands to greater abuse. It promotes the privatization and monetarization of prisons, which after all need to be filled because the whole business becomes a business in the name of justice. And the nature of business is to make more business, when in fact it is RICO. And that is why America Inc. has more people in prison than any other nation. Conclusion. United States Code, Title 18, is not law of the land. Title 18 is maritime and territorial jurisdiction and cannot be applied to the people. And any attempt to do so is fraud and high treason. Dated and signed, Grand Jury Foreman. Okay, before we get started, just real quick, I know we spoke about this before, but I want to make a note about it since we're talking about USC Title 18, which again is where the federal penal code was found. And I believe it was 1970. That date sticks in my mind. I should go relook it back up again. But I think it was 1970 is when Congress gave the authority for U.S. attorneys to be able to call for grand juries. And, you know, when you have a grand jury called in for a criminal action, and then, of course, it turns into a court of record, and because all criminal cases must be tried in a court of record. And then they set up their statutory grand juries and their statutory trial juries, totally under control. The grand jury is almost completely, totally under control by the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney, and he'll get his ham sandwich. And, of course, the trial jury is almost completely under the control of the judge, where he'll tell them, well, you get to decide the facts, but I decide the law. And I'll let you know who's innocent or guilt by looking at that law. Now, of course, there's always that time when the jury or the grand jury, the trial jury, just sees beyond what they're being told and are able to come up with the right conclusion. But more often than not, you know, when we go into these courts, we're battling up against not only the judge and the prosecutor, but also against the jury, a tainted jury that already believes things that are not so. And who do not have the authority and the power to decide what the penalty might be with an eye on restitution. Of course, the judge makes that decision according to legislative law, And then from that point, there is no restitution for the individual. If there is a fine, the money goes to the government. It doesn't go to the injured party. One other thing, the titles. There are 54 titles in the federal law. Each one of those 54 titles, well, let me say that one of those titles actually is blank. I forget which number. It's not number 54, but somewhere in there is a blank title that's just called reserved. So there's actually 53 titles. But nevertheless, it runs up to 54. And each title identifies and gives the necessary jurisdiction. There are some titles that don't give any jurisdiction, such as Title 26. It doesn't give a jurisdiction at all. Half of those titles are what's called positive law. Okay, so it's the law, and it has a heavier penalty to an individual who breaks that statute. In opposed to regulations. The other half of the titles are just regulations. But even there, when you break the rules, so to speak, you're brought into an administrative court. And those administrative courts don't have the power to fine and incarcerate, although they can be turned into a criminal court if it's done properly, of course. For instance, Title 18, they can call it for a criminal court case and turn it over to a true court of record. Whereas the jury, it could be explained to the jury that these people are controlled under these necessary legislation, but nevertheless they have the power and the authority. They need to understand they have the power and authority to negate that, to nullify that law. If they think it's invalid, they think it's not proper, they think it's too destructive and it doesn't follow justice. They can also have the authority, of course, even to reduce the sentences, if any, or ignore the sentences, even if they're required. Again, the jury should be in there for the purpose of seeking restitution. But nevertheless, those people who are found underneath those titles, have to be somewhat, to some degree, tried under those agreements that they've made, because they've been given certain authorities and powers beyond what we normally have. They have certain jurisdictions and certain powers and certain authorities. And when they abuse those authorities, that's when they should be, found and tried in some court. Okay. Let's see what else we have here before we look for questions. By the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 to get into the queue. I think it's star 6 and a 1 or something like that. I never go that way into that, so I'm not sure what that other number is. There's only 2 people in the queue right now, so star 6 to get into the queue. Jen, do we have any questions?
Yes, I have a couple of announcements, and I have about 2 pages of questions.
Okay.
First, with the announcements, we have added a number of things this week to the website. If you go to the blue bar at the top and hold your mouse over members, and on the drop-down, there's another members tab. Click that, and you'll find that we have updated both of our vows, the jurist vow and the NLA leadership vow. So I've had some requests for the vow, and was the one that we had the right one and so on. So you can go to the members tab, hit the members again, and you can download those and use them from now on. We've added one other thing, and that's a letter that you can send out to industry, Liberty groups, anybody that you think has a fair amount of money that would fund Liberty projects. It's all set up on letterhead. You can download it, put in the name and title of the person in the company, the CEO, whatever his name is, so on, and then his address, and in the body of the letter it gives you a place where you say who you are, and what your status is. Are you an officer or anything, state coordinator, national coordinator, county organizer, or just member? You put one of the four in. And then you come down to the bottom and sign your name and your status and mail it out. And if we get enough people to do a little bit of research here, a little bit of Googling as to who funds Liberty Groups, and go ahead and download the letter and send some of these out. And don't worry about duplicating. If we get three or four going to one company, that's even better. That shows there's a lot of people out there that are pushing this stuff, and it'll give it more emphasis. So I would urge you all to go ahead and give that a shot. There's nothing you can do that is harmful. You can't mess it up. Just fill in your information, copy it off. Maybe there's a large company in your local town, and they sometimes do humanitarian projects and things like that, and find out who the CEO is, or maybe the local manager or whatever. Look up their information, fill out the form, and send them one. If we send enough of these out, we're probably going to get lucky on some. And at that, Terry has something she would like to add right here. Terry, are you unmuted?
Yeah, just one note before we go on. On that particular letter, the return or the response would come to the national leadership, and so we would respond to that letter. If people were to respond to that, we would then pick up communications with that person directly, and so the person sending it out won't really have any direct contact with the individual that they might call them up or send them a letter or something like that. All that information comes to us, our fax number, our phone number, our email. So it'll all come to us. But go ahead, Jim.
I just wanted to suggest that once you fill it out and you're ready to print it, read it once before you sign it. I'm amazed at how many people don't read their own work, and there's really kind of mistakes made accidentally, of course. But if we want to present our best face to anybody that we're asking a donation from, so read it one time through when you're done making your changes and ensure that it says the right thing. Thank you.
Great. And now I would like to commend one of our members that's been working extraordinarily hard. That's Jim Barr. He's a Pennsylvanian in Allegheny County, and he's really curious about the judges in this state, so he has contacted by himself 100 judge candidates, and he asked each one of them, as a sitting judge, would you honor the People's Common Law Grand Jury as supported by the National Liberty Alliance? Now, what do you think the response has been? An absolute zero. We haven't got one response back from 100 candidates for judges in Pennsylvania. That's kind of a sad commentary. Okay, that's all I have for announcements. Jim, New York Jim, wanted to say a few things about what's going on right now. Let's see, where is he hiding? I saw him a minute ago. James, where'd he go? Oh, there he is. There he was. There he is. Are you with us, Jim? He's driving back from Syracuse tonight. Said he would be on his cell. He's signed in. Can you hear us, Jim?
Yes, I can. You're in
go
the great
right
state
ahead.
Of confusion.
That's the wrong Jim, huh?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Go right ahead.
No, I'm all done driving. I left there early, so. I just wanted to say that I appreciate all of the petitions to join her and the challenging her coming in. And I wondered if I could possibly have volunteers to help in the process. So if anybody wants, they're going good. I got about 20 of them so far, which is way more than I can handle. It takes a little while to get them done. And so if anybody wants to volunteer, I know I have one volunteer right now, but I think two or three more. And so that's what I wanted to call out for. I really think that this is just going to be the one that does it right here. I mean, because it's going to question every judge, doesn't matter where they're at, what level of court you're in. It's definitely not a court of record. We know we can't find one of them anywhere in the country. So almost everybody's got a case. And if anybody doesn't and they're in a court of record, please let us know that too. That's all I had to say, you know. Just give us a ring at intake, or, you know, an email at intake, and let us know. All right? That's all I have to say.
Yeah, that would be intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. So that's intake, nationallibertyalliance.org. Anyone that could help Jim out, be appreciated. We have a lot of work to do, and there's other committees. People might want to volunteer for other committees. You can give a call to Jan or send Jan an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and he can communicate with you what committees we have going and what kind of help we need. And again, no experience necessary. You know, everybody's got some experiences in something, and you can exercise those experiences somewhere or learn some new experiences, new things. But we surely do need as much help as possible, especially the work that Jim's doing. We're going to have, when we file our papers, which we'll be doing sometime this month, I'm pretty sure we're going to be doing it this month, pushing ahead, forging hard towards that toward that date to be able to file. But we are, with that filing, we are going to be filing about 60, maybe more, but 60 indictments of judges. So we're going to be indicting 60 judges, and that's a rough number. It's somewhere around there. We're indicting the judges who just continued to go forward and ignored us with these non-judicial foreclosures. We've told them on more than one occasion. We explained to them that they're breaking the law and how they were doing and how the courts have been weaponized to do this, and they ignored it and went forward anyway. We're also going to indict the CEOs of these mortgage companies, so there'll probably be about 40 of them that we will be indicting, that we've notified that this was against the law, that there was ultimately RICO, and they went forward anyway and took people's houses. We do expect to press hard towards the federal courts to reinstate, restore these people, to force the restoration of these people that have lost their homes and other things. Some of these judges are being indicted because they've ignored the habeas corpuses that we've sent in. We've sent in, I think, about 24 or so habeas corpuses. Two of them were somewhat successful. They wouldn't acknowledge it, but they did release the people, and they still hid the papers. But we're not going to chase those two judges, I don't believe, that at least let them go, the people go. But anyway, there's about 20-some-odd judges there that we will be indicting on that level, too. Anybody who needs a habeas corpus, we set up a new system. If you're stuck in a court and you need to get out and you just can't, these people just continue to abuse you, you can go out to our site, nationallibertyalliance.org, and on the blue bar, click on Due Process, read that page very carefully, and then click on the link on the bottom, click to enter it. Now, on that page, and we spoke about this last week, but we're going to bring this up every week for a while, especially for the new people. We have instructions and forms to join your case to the grand jury action. So anybody who wants to join the case, there's instructions and forms here, and we'll communicate. That's what Jim's going to be working on, this particular, all of these cases we're going to be talking about now. So to join your case, you can follow the instructions, work with Jim, get the paperwork in proper order, and then we'll move your case into our case with us. Also, we have instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction. Anybody that is in any court, first order of business, even if you're going to join your case with us, first order of business is challenge the jurisdiction. And you could take that right up to the highest state level. If it doesn't go anywhere and they still are abusing you and not letting you go like they need to do, you can then join our case and we will pursue and push in the federal courts that jurisdiction challenge. that they do not have the jurisdiction. The other thing is instructions and forms to move your case to the federal court for cause. You can do that all on your own for any case. If you challenge a jurisdiction and you want to move it into the federal court on your own, you could do that. There's the instruction information, all the necessary forms to do this. The other thing is instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus. Anybody who needs to file a habeas corpus to get out of a court, whether they are literally physically incarcerated or statutorily incarcerated, you know, being brought back into the court, and you need to get out of this court, you can file a habeas corpus. There's detailed information, instructions, and all the necessary forms to do this. The key thing is really moving this. It's a federal court move that you have to do. It shouldn't cost you a dime. We've got all the paperwork necessary, including the common law or the court of record cover sheet for this. But to move your case, it should be free of charge anyway, moving it for cause. It has to be for a constitutional cause, and constitutional cause is due process, and these people don't have jurisdiction. So you can move your case in on your own. If you don't get anywhere with that, again, you can work with us and join your case, and we can help with you there. But, you know, the key to, once you get into the federal court, I think the key to winning there is having the knowledge to be able to move from one point to another and deal with the situation. Also, we have, and I'll get back to that in a minute. Well, let me finish that now. Anybody who is going to challenge jurisdiction, let's say you start there. That's going to take time. It's going to take about 20 or 30 days before they even kick into gear to go forward with it. Then another 30 days and another 30. You'll have like 60 to 90 days before the next term shows up, before you make your next move if it's not successful. Because you move your case from one point to another. And all these forms, as you go through them, you'll see how you can use one and then the next and the next. So you can gain a lot of time. The thing is while you have that time, that is the time to be educating, okay? And that brings us to another thing we have on this page with downloads. We have the civil procedure book, which everybody should read through and understand the procedures of the court. By the way, that is USC Title 28. Title 28 is the rules of the court and the rules of the rules of procedure and the rules of evidence and procedure of evidence. So everybody should read through them and kind of understand it. It doesn't really apply to us, but it makes sense and logical. You utilize it because, you know, we do want to try to keep things going as much as we can in the rules of the court as far as procedure and the rules of evidence. We also have maxims, Sir Edward Coke and maxims from Brouwer's, The Lawful Path, and those are really good to look through because they're common law maxims and the rules of the court. Maxims rule the court, by the way. And most importantly, if you're going to be moving through the courts and you have little or no experience, or even if you have some experience but you kind of get stuck here and stuck there and you're not sure why, well, we have a book called Court Procedure Book. That's on this page also. It's a PDF book. It's a free download. I believe it's 186 pages, so it's quite a bit of information as far as details. Got a lot of pictures of forms. It gives you the anatomy of a court case. So if you're going to file a case, let's say you wanted to file a case in the courts, you know, there's certain papers you have to create and file, you know. And then also as you move the case along, you know, making a motion, there's certain papers you have to put together. All the forms are written in there. And we're going to make those forms more available with more instruction as time goes on this page. For instance, in the anatomy of a court case, I think we're going to get into detail and lay that out here also and possibly even do the necessary forms even on the, well, as much as we can for that. The other thing is here, we have Black's Law Dictionary, Bouwer's Dictionary, and probably one of them, in my opinion, one of the most powerful tools we have here is our footnotes. We have over 400 footnotes, and you can download them all to come down in a zip file. You open up the zip file, and you'll find about 400 notepads, notes in there. Each one of these notes, you know, have a title. For instance, it might be Court of Record. And if you opened up that, you'll see a whole bunch of different court cases concerning a court of record, which gives the meaning of the court of record, the fact that a court of record proceeds according to the common law, no statutes allowed. And just about, you know, all the footnotes that I've been using over the years, I started collecting these footnotes as I was researching, and I would, you know, make these notes in the notepad and put them on and use them as footnotes. And as I needed that footnote from time to time, I'd be able to go in there and pull out the necessary, you know, lines I'd want to use. A lot of it is U.S. Decisions. Almost all of my footnotes. I did get a message from someone recently, secondhand actually through Jan, that they thought that we had some errors in some of our positions, that we weren't quoting them correctly and so on and so forth. Well, a couple of things. There's what's called, if I'm using the proper word, I think it's, stylist or who? When you read a court case, there is sort of a synopsis on the court case. I forget what that's called. And then there's the actual full court case, you know, as far as the conclusion is concerned. Let's take, for instance, the United States, a stylist or something like that. Let's take the court case United States versus Williams. That's the complete decision that we have up there. You can read it. But sometimes you're reading only the synopsis of the case, and you may not get it all. Also, sometimes, or more often than not, especially in the appellate cases, you'll get law clerks that'll be doing a lot of this writing and not necessarily the judge, and that could create a problem too, especially when they're putting a synopsis out there. But again, going back to the court cases that I have been using over the years, most of them, and very close to all of them, as a matter of fact, I've gotten them out of Black's Law. So they're pretty accurate. So I use the Black's Law 4th edition. But I have gotten some lists from other individuals who have collected also court cases, and they made reference to and so on and so forth, and they have conclusions. The other thing is, let's take a look, for instance, at, Marbury versus Madison. Okay, the conclusion of Marbury versus Madison is anything that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Now, there clearly is the one of the conclusions of that case, okay? But you won't see it written exactly that way. But you will find, you know, people referring to that and writing it that way. All those words are inside the conclusion, and it's just a matter of really bringing the two points together. Null and void means the same thing. In one place it says null, and in another place it says void, and they're just brought together concerning the same issue, anything repugnant to the Constitution, anything that is anti-Constitution, anything that is against the Constitution. Okay, so... But anyway, if anybody does see any cases that they believe is in error, we'll check them out and make sure, because we're not, very much capable of making mistakes. And we usually do, we always discover a mistake. We always make it known and make the correction. Who wants to build upon lies? Okay, anyway, so there's quite a few downloads here people can take, and you should be using your time. If you're in court right now, and you're having a problem and you're frustrated, and maybe they're even ready to pounce upon you, and maybe you've been in there for a long time, start off with challenging jurisdiction. It's going to buy you 60 days. 60 days of education. If you're not educating yourself, well, then maybe at the end of the 60 days you deserve whatever you get, because we're ignorant to the facts. You know, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Thomas Jefferson was quite clear with that, and he made that statement numerous times in his life in different letters, and it says it a little different in different places, but it all comes out to the same thing. If your people are ignorant, they're not going to get anywhere, and they're not going to be able to have control. People expect to be ignorant and free. They expect what never was and never will be. That is one of the ways he did write that. Also on this page are all the memorandums that you can also find under our page for a grand jury. We have them listed here also because they're very important. They have each one of these memorandums as a subject, and every one of these subjects people need to understand. You know, we have a memorandum of sovereignty. People need to really understand what sovereignty is. What's eclipse sovereignty? Who is the true sovereign? Law, the difference, we have a memorandum on law and equity. What's the difference between law and equity? How are we to understand that? Well, this memorandum makes the point and comes to conclusions. All of these memorandums come to conclusions built up, become self-evident, built up on law and on past United States Supreme Court rulings, the meanings of words, and so on and so forth. We have jury tampering and stacking, how exactly that is going on in the courts, how they have destroyed our grand jury and trial juries. And they stack them, they prepare them. And you go to court, everyone's against you. You know, the jury's already been built up against you. They've been tainted. The judge is against you because he's trying to get the status quo and working, especially if you're going up against the government or you're going up against big corporation, the judge is going to maintain status quo. He's already against you. Give him a hard time, he's already against you. And so he's already working with the prosecutor. So it's little old you by little, you know, yourself, and that's it. You need this ammunition, and you need to be able to defend yourself. What is an Article III court? What are these other courts that claim to be Article III courts? Or what's an Article II court? Because we discussed that in Article III courts. The 13th Amendment, the 10th Amendment, the 2nd Amendment really needs to be looked at very closely. We've done memorandums on these. So again, you'll find that everything we have up here, by the way, is in both PDF form and Word form. And the Word form is ready to rock and roll with, so to speak. You can download it. You download it in Word. You click the button on the top, being able to make changes, and save it to your computer. And it becomes your a Word document that you can, you know, change things around in there. You can add to it, take away from it, and do whatever you want. But I'd be very careful not to disrupt its meaning. And if you start putting the man on the land stuff in there, you're only going to dig yourself further into a problem. But in any event, it's there. But some people don't have Microsoft Word. Although Microsoft Word, you can get programs that will open up Microsoft Word. But for that reason, we put PDFs up there. I know from me, from my perspective, these PDFs, if I highlight them, I can paste them. So you can highlight it and paste it over into a Word document or whatever kind of document you're using if you're not using Word. The only problem with that is it doesn't carry over the footnotes. So you need to be good with typing, or you download all of the footnotes, and you'll find those footnotes in there. You can cut and paste them out of there. We have some landmark Supreme Court cases, not too many. United States versus Williams, of course, is one of them. Miranda versus Arizona, an extremely powerful case. If you haven't read Miranda versus Arizona, you need to go read that case. Marbury versus Madison, very extremely important case, and people need to go through that very carefully. But you do need to understand some of the terms that they're talking about, or understand some of the things that they're talking about, to really get the good understanding of some of the things that they're concluding. But again, that comes with practicing and reading these papers and notes and cases and understanding how the court system works and so on. United States versus Williams, which of course is one of the most important cases for us. It is packed with all kinds of great stuff concerning the power and the authority, we the people, and the control, how we can control our government ultimately through that process. Although, of course, the decision doesn't get into that detail, but the information, as you expand it across, it makes it clear that we have consent of government through the juries, both grand and petit juries. Okay, and there's the other stuff up here, and we're going to be adding more. So again, if you have a case and you want to work with it and you start challenging jurisdiction and you can move to the next step after that, eventually move it into the federal court, you can build up 3-4 months, maybe even up to 6 months of time. So as that's going through that process, you have a lot of time to study. So that's what people need to be doing. And if you're not in court now, you need to be studying now, because one day you very well may be. Or you may need to go into court. Why bring a lawyer when you can defend yourself? Who knows the case better than you? You know, and if you can't articulate yourself well, that's fine. You know, study and come to an understanding, then hire a lawyer, and then control that guy. It's your case, not his. Okay, and he needs to, he or she needs to be doing what you tell them to do, and you need to prevent him or her from saying anything more than what you want them to say, and also make sure you stay within your jurisdiction, and so on. And all these things are learned through this particular page that we have, where we have all this great information. So people need to take use of this. And but only if we, the people, become knowledgeable are we going to be able to take control of the process of consent of government by understanding the science of consent of government. And that's what we teach here at National Liberty Alliance, the science of the consent of government, which goes beyond just controlling the courts, but also controlling the political environment. And therefore, through that, we the people, if we educate ourselves, and we don't need a lot, we don't need millions of people involved here. You know, 50,000, 100,000 people pushing this, 15,000 people involved in a court system, and a lot more than that, maybe a couple of 100,000 in the political realm. But even that is in theory, because really you can control a county by five people. That's what they do right now. Politically, it's controlled by four or five people. Everything in your county is controlled by four or five people. Take those four or five positions away from them in that county, and you control that county, and bring it back to justice. Bring it back to the people. Bring it back to the grassroots. And we could do that in every county. If we got 3,100 and whatever, let's say 3,100 counties, okay, well, five times that is about 15,000 to 16,000 people. With 16,000 people, we can control the political environment. And, of course, you want to pull more and more people in, fill those positions in around you, and teach these people what it is you're doing, and teach them about what's right and wrong here, and the law. And again, they can come to National Liberty Alliance to learn all those things also. So people need to take advantage of these things and get active and get educated. Okay, I think that's it for me. Jan, what kind of questions do you have?
Well, the first one says, thank you for reading the memorandum of court of record previously, but I have trouble understanding this phrase. Please explain what the phrase "error lies to their judgments" means on line 54.
Yeah, you know, I have the same problem. I've wondered what that meant too. Error lies in its judgment, and I'm not sure what that they're talking about. I was hoping. Let's see, is Brent around? I don't know if he needs to know. It kind of just hangs out there. And I've puzzled on it, too, and I don't have a solution. I didn't want to remove it from the quote because it's part of the quote. But I'm going to try to dig a little further into that and see if I can't discover the meaning of that. And when I see Brent, maybe we'll quiz him. Maybe he knows.
Okay.
I don't have an answer to that.
Next question. A similar question was presented and answered several shows ago, but I need clarification. Why is it that NLA chooses not to be an educational 501c3, not-for-profit organization, but instead a trust organization, so that the donors are given a receipt and the donations received are tax-deductible, and NLA, like other known grassroots organizations, would then be able to apply for grants for the much-needed expenses that you say are needed?
Well, the main reason for that is it puts us into their sandbox. And if we stop playing in their sandbox, they may come out after us, for instance, you know, trying to be a lawyer without a license type thing. We fall under their categories. We fall. We are now agreeing to their jurisdictions. We're not corporations. We're not controlled by the government. We are a common law trust. So even the common law trust, the way that is put up, as a matter of fact, I'm going to put up probably on this page here, which we're looking at for due process, I'm going to put up there how to create a common law trust and some information on that and how that works. But that gives you a lot of privacy as a common law trust, and it's unbreakable. Not to say that they won't try to break the law to break it. Of course, they will try. I think they'd run into a lot of problems trying to break this one with us because of the status we have declared for ourselves as we the people and have taken on being the sureties of peace through via the common law grand jury. But nevertheless, we're not going to play with the corporate game that they got going. We're not going to come under their jurisdictions by making such claims or operating in such a fashion that will place us under that jurisdiction, because then indeed, in fact, we will start to fall under federal laws, because now we're agreeing to certain things. We're not going to touch it, so we don't get involved with it. So that's why, and that's where we're at with that. What else you got?
Well, this is kind of the same thing. What are the benefits of having the NLA organization set up and established as a trust?
Yeah, well, freedom from, we pretty much what we just said, freedom from
right.
Living inside their sandbox.
Hey, okay. Can I see someone on this 5013?
Someone talking?
Can you hear
me? You're over-modulating.
Yeah, back off your mic. Maybe that's it.
If somebody else is talking off here.
Oh, well. Is anybody on your line with you?
I don't know. I'm on the phone, so that's a bad thing. Can you hear me now?
Well, we can hear you.
Okay. Hey, the 501(c)(3) thing, people don't understand the insidiousness of it.
Hold on, Jan. We're feeding back through you. You should mute yourself. Maybe lower your speakers. And also, you were over-modulating. Back off your mic a little bit when you do talk. Go ahead, Gerard.
The 501(c)(3) sounds like a good idea, and the biggest carrot on the stick for the way that they get it through is they tell people, well, if you give to a 501(c)(3), you can write it off your income, and that's the carrot on the stick, and that's how they took over the churches, because they tell them, well, you know, see, churches don't need to be 501(c)(3). That's a big fallacy, and it was pushed on them because they said, well, look at, you'll get more money because your parishioners can write it off their taxes. That's an extra thing that they can't do now. And we'll certify that you're tax exempt, but you have to do what, you have to fill out everything and give us all your paperwork and show us what you're doing. And there's these other stipulations, like you can't get involved with you can't talk about politics and get involved with propaganda. Or which technically is propagating the faith. So what they did was they took control over the churches with the 501(c), just like they can take control over the people. So they put a carrot on the stick there. But what they don't, you know, like John says, you're entering into a jurisdiction that they're controlling. And God forbid you put something in the wrong way, or they don't like it, or they can set you up with it. It's not necessary in the first place. You know, a church doesn't need a 501(c) because they get an automatic exemption. And I'm not so sure that you can't write off a charitable contribution to a church if it's not a 501(c). There's other charitable organizations in the world that, you know, you can give to. And if you got the check and you show that you gave it to them, how can the government say that's not a charitable organization because it doesn't have their stamp of approval on it. You know what I mean? So anyway, we don't want to fight that, but the 501(c) is very insidious. And Johnson, and when he became president, he did the Johnson Amendment, which basically shut the churches off from talking about any political candidate, even if he was a blaspheming, you know, lying, cheating, murdering thing, they're afraid to say anything. And they knew that the churches would be very powerful in the political sphere if the guy's getting up and saying, look, this guy's evil. He doesn't believe in God's law. He operates outside of God's law, and you shouldn't vote for him. They're death afraid of that. That's a stake in their heart.
Okay. Did you finish the road, or did you drop?
No, I was on a roll. You didn't hear me?
Yeah, we heard all of it, but then you just abruptly stopped.
But anyway,
okay.
I don't know when I dropped.
Just seconds after I spoke. You had just dropped maybe seconds before that. No, it's not much. I think we got it all.
Okay. So anyway, that's my take on the 501c3. And
okay. Thanks, Gerard. Are you going to be on the board? Are you going to be able to check off the board?
Does in the country. Well, I'm on my phone, so until I get on my computer, I can't do that.
Right. Well, when do you expect me to? Well, let me know when you get there, if you get there.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Jan, what else we got?
Okay, next question.
Yep.
This is about the, I think this person called in before, was taking care of her mother, so on, and there were several people involved. How do I respond to a letter from the Center of Elder Law and Justice who are charging me $6,000 for filing alleged pendants and affidavits that stopped the sale of mother's home for 1 week? The judge does not want to press these charges. However, this agency who has mother's guardianship does. Can I fax you the papers? They gave me 10 days to pay this.
Well, who's going to enforce it? If the judge isn't enforcing it, the courts isn't enforcing it, who's going to enforce it?
Doesn't say.
Okay, well, look, if it's the court's going to try to enforce this for these people and the judge says, I really want to do it, but I got to do it, whatever you say, it doesn't matter. Challenge the jurisdiction, you shut them right down. And you can beat it if you follow the instructions and start to get educated, follow the instructions, use the forms, take your time, and go through things very carefully. You should be able to accomplish your goal of an education enough to be able to deal with the next step and the next step and the next step. But again, if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. All right, what else we got? But as far as them just sending you a bill and so on and so forth, they still got to have due process or try to make believe they have due process. They still got to take you into a court and get a court decision in order to get enforcement. And whenever they do that, you're going to want to move it into a common law court. When you respond, and if they continue to the process through as an equity court, then you could challenge the jurisdiction to get out of there. If it's in a village court, town court, a city court, we got to be careful with city courts because some city courts are courts of record. I know New York City, all those courts are courts of record. And I heard some other states had some cities with courts of record also. But in any event, those other lower courts, they have no power authority whatsoever. You can get right out of that without a problem. County courts are courts of record. State courts are courts of record. Federal courts are courts of record. And New York City courts are courts of record. I know no other. Okay, next.
Okay, how do I go about pursuing mother's guardianship?
I'd have to know more information on that. But again, these courts have no authority or power. They usually don't have fiduciary authority. They don't have a claim, and those are the things that they have to have. They don't have a true witness. Usually there is no true affidavit sitting there in the case. A case cannot go forward without an affidavit. So all those things missing only proves one thing. It proves that you're not in a court of record. They have no power and authority over you. Cease and dismiss. Desist. Go through the process and learn how to shut the court down by challenging their jurisdiction. And there's a process. You don't challenge the jurisdiction and stay in the court for a year arguing it. You only give them one choice, one chance to take care of the business. And in the paperwork that we have, it explains to them what they need to do. It has to go up to a court of record. That the judges in a court of record have to make that decision, and the decision must be the correct decision. The correct decision is they don't have jurisdiction because they're statutory. They're acting in equity. As a matter of fact, their jurisdiction is unknown as a matter of fact. So if they don't take care of business and do the right thing on the state level, that's when you move it into federal court, and that's when you go after restitution because you're going to want to go after each one of them. I have it written up right now for $2,500 for each violation of an unalienable right in real money. And $2,500 interpreted in today is about $37,000 because we're looking at being paid in silver dollars okay, or gold pieces, doesn't matter. I'm gonna lower that. I think that's way too high. I'm gonna think about maybe we'll do 1,000. Of course, people have the option to change that number to whatever they want, but don't be ridiculous. People go in and ask for $100 million. That's ridiculous, and that's not good faith either. It's wrong. But let's say $1,000 in real money. If you wanted Morgan silver dollars, let's say you require payment in Morgan silver dollars, you know, real money, at face value of $1,000. I think a Morgan silver dollar is about $18 a piece. So let's say right there, that's $18,000. I think that's more than enough for each violation. And if you're going after two judges and a prosecutor, maybe that's operating all in a conspiracy, it also turns into RICO because money is exchanging through the processes. But don't worry too much about the RICO side of things. If you've got three people that you're suing and bringing into that federal court for cause, and you're looking for restitution for violating of your unalienable right of due process alone, maybe even bringing you into jurisdictions unknown, that's two, and maybe you can find a third and a fourth, and you can, I'm sure, but let's say two, you know, that's $17,000 or $18,000 for each individual twice. So you're looking at about almost $120,000 between three individuals with two counts. Well, was it two counts or three counts? I'd have to think. It'd be three counts then. So, but anyway, look, when you have to go into that point, take it into federal court, that's when you go for your damages. You've given them the chance in the original court to take care of business. You've given them chance in the state court to take care of business. They all did the wrong thing. You take them all together and bring them into federal court and deal with them there. And again, it takes time to do that. So it gives you plenty of time to educate yourself. The people expect to be ignorant and free. Forget about it. You're not going to get it. What's next?
Okay. Where do I begin to start to file a lawsuit? Can I obtain a common law attorney and the cost?
Well, if you want to file a lawsuit, there's no one better to file that lawsuit and to operate that case than you. If you can't articulate yourself well, if you just don't feel comfortable with that, maybe you can hire, you could try to hire an attorney or a lawyer that will hopefully do your will, but I doubt it. You're going to ask them or require them to do certain things once you learn what needs to be done that lawyers will not do. Maybe in those areas you can pick it up and take care of it yourself. But look, at most court cases, you rarely go into the court and make a real argument. The court cases are really mostly done on paper. Okay, if you're going to sue someone or someone's suing you, it's all on paper. And a lot, even on the criminal side of things, at least through these little administrative town and village courts, you know, again, you can deal with this mostly on paper as you move it up the process, because you're changing it into a challenge of jurisdiction. You're not going to discuss what they claim to be the criminal side of things. You're going to be talking about the fact that they don't have a right to hear the case. And so that now becomes a different kind of case, and you're dealing, it will be all in writing. You could end up speaking in the courts. I would suggest very strongly to say very little in a court, object to almost everything, and let the judge know I'll respond on paper, because I'm not a lawyer. You know, you guys have all these degrees. I'm not a lawyer. I got to go look at books and think about things and figure things out and put it on paper, and then I'll give it to you. You know, what are they going to say? Of course, you get to do that. So. What else we got?
Okay, this is when the mother was in the nursing home. Can I get guardianship of mother? I was her primary caretaker for 7 years, running back and forth from Rochester to Buffalo. Cook, clear, shop, whatever mom needed. At that time, I was also the POA until she was admitted to the hospital. Then guardianship was permanently awarded to the Center for Elder Care and Justice by the judge, Supreme Court, County of Erie. Brother and sister were at odds initially, re-mom's assets. Out of frustration...
Brother and sister what?
Were at odds initially relative to her mother's assets. I guess they were fighting over the money.
That's where the real problem begins. You know, when siblings start to fight and bicker over money, especially when you're talking about your parents, they need to grow up a little bit. They need to get a grip on things, because they're only hurting their parents more than anything else as they fight over money. So first order of business is stop fighting. You got to get these people to understand as long as you are at odds, they will win, and all of yous will lose. You'll lose everything because they're going to take everything. You're not going to get a dime of your parents' hard labor of a lifetime, whatever they've put away and gathered. They're even going to take the house. They're going to sell the house. The lawyer's going to stick a whole bunch of money in their pocket. The courts kind of get money in a roundabout way. They're going to soak it up in medical bills. And look, it's just going to all disappear. Okay? And I got to presume that the other siblings didn't necessarily do anything to create the case. They're just fighting and bickering, maybe. I don't know. Or are they trying to fight for the custody? I don't know whether that's the case. But if the judge just took it away and gave it to someone, well, first order of business, who gave that judge the fiduciary authority to be able to give that fiduciary authority away? Where did that come from? He doesn't have it. Unless one of the other siblings somehow did that, then of course you can battle that out in court. But if the individual who has been taking care of that parent and spending time and making sure things are going right and wants to continue to do that, the state doesn't have any authority to step in. They will do step in if there's big money there. That's where they'll step in any of those cases. But they don't have the power, the authority to do it. And the lawyers won't push this to that level because they got to keep quiet in certain areas. Otherwise, they'll lose their license. So, with their claim to be a license. But you got to fight this battle yourself. You can win it. And you have to get educated. First order of business, challenge jurisdiction. And the person really needs to be speaking to get a few little details, to give them a few other thoughts on what they might be able to do. But without knowing the answers to questions I might have to help them, I can't go any further than that. But the key thing is educating. We can't sit here and teach you everything you need to know to accomplish the goal. But if you do the studying, do your homework, get your knowledge, understand the anatomy of a court case, understand the process and procedures, how to move a court, how to challenge jurisdiction, and you can even use a habeas corpus for this too, to take her back custody back from them. But again, all those things and knowledge is out there, but you have to learn a lot of that stuff, and then we can give you ideas that you would understand a lot more readily and be able to, then go and exercise. Next.
Apparently, this is just a comment on this. My sister put in an offer of over $7,000 above the asking price after the date they gave us to buy the home. The center called sister's realtor and said they could not buy mom's house. Now, can we get full disclosure of mother's and dad's assets? We don't know what was taken from dad's investments.
Well, they don't want to tell you, and yeah, they're not going to, they want that house. They don't want you to have it. They want to sell it. They want to take control of that house. They want all their assets. They want everything. If they could take their blood and sell it, they'd do that too, and I do believe that if they could do that, they will do that. These people are vultures. You can, by the way, if you lost your home, If they've seized control of your parents' assets and taken it away, you challenge jurisdiction, you will win. And when you challenge jurisdiction and you finally win, the end of the day, the end of the tunnel there brings you to a place where they must restore everything. So if you lost your home, and remember, there is no such thing as a statute of limitation in common law, okay? So if you lost your home 2 or 3 years ago to some shady mortgage company who performed all these unlawful things to get control over your home, to steal your home and sell it and do whatever they do with it, if you challenge jurisdiction now, because you just discovered you can challenge jurisdiction, you just discovered they didn't have it, you just discovered they did a wrongdoing to you, you go into the court, you file a thing on challenging the jurisdiction, move it through the process, the end result of the process is you get everything back. You may not be able to get that very home. I mean, if you really wanted it, you can. But you'll at least get the value of your losses here. You need to take control of, look at, These are your parents, and if they are being taken care of someplace, and or even in their home, and you're trying to take care of things, state has no business coming in and dealing with your business. But I'll tell you what, the siblings, you guys got to get along. You know because you don't understand that you know if you're a divided family, it cannot stand. You will never stand against them because they'll use that division against you. But unite as a family, learn the law, understand what's going on, go in there and get your things back and take control over your parents again. Same thing with children on the other side of things. They've taken our children. They don't have the power, the authority to do this. Who gave them the fiduciary authority? What was the proof of a claim against you or that individual that they should have control? They don't have any of those things. Anyway, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. Next.
What are my options to gaining my mom's guardianship and inheritance?
Your options are to learn and study. And if you put a good 90 days in and you're really serious and you put a couple hours a day here or there, at least an hour and a half a day here or there, I'd say a couple really, but put in 15 hours a week, and over the course of the next 3 months, you surely will establish enough of an education to be able to deal with these people, and you'll have all kinds of options and different ways to go, and you can win. That's
okay.
About it. But again, people expect to be ignorant and free. Forget about it.
Next question. Do you help with family court cases, or where can I find help? I need legal advice badly.
No, you need to understand how to help yourself by taking the course, going to these forms, and you'll see your solution in there. We will help to direct you to the solution, but we can't sit around working and talking to you for 10 hours on things you don't even understand, maybe. You have to retain these things and keep some notes, and this is what that'll do for you if you take these courses. And take this and work through all these paperworks, you will be able to come to a fundamental understanding of what's going on and how they're doing what they're doing, and you'll come to a complete understanding on the fraud that they're pulling upon you and how to deal with that fraud and take back control. But you have to do it. You know, if you're looking for some advice isn't enough. You have to do something. If you're looking for a bar attorney to do this for you, forget about it. It's not going to happen. You got to do it. If you want a lawyer to deal with it and take care of it, you're going to still give the money back to the lawyers anyway to begin with, okay? And you're probably going to lose because this is happening day in and day out. The end result is always the same. They win, you lose. Because why? Because we're ignorant, and therefore we're not free. Get knowledge. That's what you need. Start there. Go out, click on due process, read that page thoroughly, follow through, start educating yourself. You'll have enough, and then we can give you some advice, the first order of business. Go challenge jurisdiction. You're going to buy yourself 60 days of education right there. Challenge jurisdiction. Right there. Then you can move to the next step. If you need more, move to the next step. You get another 60 days, another 2 months of education. But if you're not educating yourself and you're expecting to get free and be a free individual, act like a free individual, take control of your assets and exercise your liberty, and you're trying to do that and remain ignorant, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Next question.
Okay, if not made explicit already, will NLA define and write in the form of a memorandum how we the people is defined? Over the years, I have run into much confusion. Having a clear statement in the form of a memorandum and definition, I believe, will help others to choose whether they want to be part of this restoration movement. And she gives six different things she's thought of as being we the people. Number one, the original signers and their posterity only. Two, only white Europeans, i.e. males and landowners. Three, everyone except African Americans and or minorities, that only the 14th Amendment applies to them. Four, every American has lost we the people status and have been demoted to the 14th Amendment citizens. Five, the sole purpose for the 14th Amendment is to address the wrongs of the past, i.e. the institution of slavery. And six, Are our indigenous populations included? Oh, this sounds like a quagmire.
Well, when you say it like that, maybe it does. Everything is really simple, okay? But it's like learning a new language. You have to learn the terms. You have to know the rules of the game. You know, if you're going to play baseball, you got to understand you got to run the first base first, not third. Okay, very simple things, though, okay? But that's what you have, because everything else gets back to logic, especially in common law, natural law. It gets right back to logic, right and wrong, just and unjust. I'm coming through you, Jan, if you can mute or maybe lower your speakers or something. Okay. People look at this too complexly, okay? I talk about our founding fathers, okay? My mother, she was first generation from Germany, okay? My father was first generation from Czechoslovakia. So I am second generation away from those two particular backgrounds, Czechoslovakian and German. A lot of people are like that. They've come in, their parents or their great parents or the great-great parents have come to this country. When we look at the signers and call them our founding fathers, we're looking at it number one, kind of in a spiritual way, okay? Our founding fathers, it has to do with the Constitution, with the common law. Our founding fathers concerning a state of mind, a state of being, living under God's rule, because that's what common law is, living under God's rule. Man, you're not held liable to any law made by anyone, anywhere, no state, no federal government, no city, no town, nothing. You are not liable to have to deal with any. You're free from all of that. But you're not free, of course. You're now bringing yourself under the law of God. You're now under his rule, and that's called natural law or common law. So their posterity doesn't necessarily mean a bloodline. So when they signed for themselves and their posterity. Now think of how powerful that really is, because your posterity is someone that isn't even born yet, or maybe that is born, or your children's children, or your children's 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 children, who haven't been born yet. So this was written for you and your posterity. You see, there's no way they can even try to say, well, we can get the people to agree in a democratic way, because who's going to get the votes from those people to agree to that, first of all? Second of all, you can't vote yourself into liberty, nor can you vote yourself out of liberty. Liberty is very clearly written up in the Constitution, in the preamble. It says that one of the purposes of government is to protect the blessings of liberty. Liberty is a blessing. It's a blessing ultimately from God. And we're a Christian nation, and the blessing comes because of our attitude and our focus towards the Creator and our desire to be obedient to that. But again, the fact that you are an American citizen, whether your parents or your grandparents came or you came here, you could have come here 3 months ago, became a citizen 3 months ago, let's say. Well, you automatically fall under the posterity point of this whole thing. So there are founding fathers. That's how I look at it anyway. And this goes beyond the physical, beyond the bloodlines. You know, take the example from the Bible. The Bible makes a clear picture. You know, we cry out, Abba, Papa, Father. You know, we are brought into the family of God, and it has to do with faith and our relationship with God, with Christ. That is ultimately the thing. So, you know, we are grafted in, as we read about it in Romans. The Bible has a lot of ways to talk about this, and it all brings us back into the Word, okay? He is not a Jew outwardly where circumcision is that of the flesh, but he is a Jew inwardly where the circumcision is that of the heart, you see? God's talking about creating a new heart in us, circumcising the heart. That's the focus, okay? And that's done, has nothing to do with bloodlines. So we have to look at the fact that we've come under the common law and the American way of life, the jurisprudence created by that common law and the American way of life. That's what we're coming in under. That's where the picture of the posterity is. That's where the picture of founding fathers and we being their children and all the way down the line and so on. And they signed on our behalf because we were unable to. But again, you know, we acknowledge it and we continue in it. and our children inherited. Our inheritance is that liberty. Anyway, I hope I got that good enough for them to understand. But next.
Okay, that was the last question.
Okay, good. It was a long time, a lot of them. All right. Okay, is Brent here? I didn't see Brent in yet. Anybody seen Brent?
I just looked and I didn't see him either.
Okay, well, Brent, if you're here, pipe in and we'll move over to you. If not, we'll move over to the callers. We'll take our first caller. Brent? I don't think he's here. We'll take our first caller. Okay, our first caller is Crystal. You got the mic, Crystal. How you doing? Crystal. Crystal Mack, you got the mic. Wonder where Crystal's at.
She called me just a little bit ago.
All right, well, we'll move on, and if you see her get into the queue, let me know. We'll try to pull her back up front. Okay, so we'll go on. Okay, our next caller is Missouri Williams from Missouri.
Hello?
Asula, how you
yes.
doing? What's your first name?
Good. Asulu. Good evening.
Asulu. Okay, how you doing?
Yes, I do have a question because I lost my house on foreclosure in 2015. So, and I know that they say that I can join my case with the to the grand jury. I have a question though about the you know the people that the mortgage company. And also the people that represent them is when I do the affidavit. Does that do they include it in that affidavit?
Do they do include what?
When I do when I put them as a defendant, I'm there.
I'm not sure I understand the question. What you're saying about the affidavit, but basically, yeah, if you lost your home in 2015. And I presume, because I haven't heard of any other foreclosures other than non-judicial foreclosures, so I presume it's a non-judicial foreclosure. But even if it is a judicial foreclosure, the way they do it, it brings us, well, let me think about this. Yeah, it doesn't bring you into a process with them that you have to participate. Either event, you can challenge jurisdiction. Okay? You could challenge
okay.
the jurisdiction of the court, and that would be the first order of business. You go up on onto our page, get into due process, read through that page very carefully, and then you go to the next page, which is where everything's at. Go through and very carefully read through all the papers concerning jurisdiction, challenging jurisdiction. Dig out your old papers. You'll see an index number in there. What state are you from? You're Missouri.
Missouri.
Yeah, I'm not
but
sure
it
what
was
they call
in Kansas. It was in Kansas. The foreclosure
it was
in Kansas.
It was where?
It was Kansas.
Kansas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you could still challenge the jurisdiction. You get the old, you got to get the papers or you can go in and dig through the records and get to go through and get all the papers for that court case. I would get everything, the entire file. Get a copy of the entire file. Bring a CD down with you or a USB. But I'd get a you know a thumb drive. I would get a CD, you know, a DVD CD, and I'd bring it down and ask them to put all that information because it should be all digital. Get it all onto a CD. They shouldn't charge any more than $5 for that. You're paying for the CD. All they have to do is push a few buttons and hit enter, and it all goes onto your CD. So it doesn't cost them money. You don't need their paper. Yeah.
I think part of her question was, does she include besides the court? The mortgage company as the
yeah,
defendant.
I was going to get to that, yes. But the first order of business, though, first order of business, she's got to get that index number or case number, whatever they have. That's the first order of business. You got to get the who's against who. You got to get, first of all, the judge involved in the case. You got to get the mortgage company. You got to get you got to look into the mortgage company, and you want to find out who the president is, the CEO or the president. Okay, I'd go for the president. And
okay.
And you got to make sure that that person hasn't changed. You got to make sure it's the president of 2015. So there's some homework to do. You got to gather that information together. As you're gathering that information together, you need to get out here and start studying on the processes and the forms and learning. Then you'll learn very quickly. You'll be able, without a big education, you'll be able to follow the instructions on challenging the jurisdiction. You file that in the court, challenge the jurisdiction of the court. It's going to be a little unique for you because they're going to say, oh, the case is closed, and you're going to have to write back and say, I don't care what it is. I just discovered I've been defrauded, and I was defrauded by that court, and that court didn't have jurisdiction, and I'm challenging it. Now, if they come back negative again, then there's another move we'd have to make, which ultimately is you'd move it into the court above it or right into the federal court. But as you're going through this process, that takes time, and that gives you time to learn. So you need to learn what you can learn. Go get all the paperwork together, absorb what you can on moving your case for cause, in a challenging jurisdiction, and then take down the book, free book for 180-some-odd pages, court access, go through that very carefully. Take the course because you'll learn everything about the law in that course, consent of government, and you should be prepared for the next step as they happen and be able to understand. If you come back here and ask a few questions here or there, the answers that I give you, you'd be able to understand a lot quicker because you'll have some requisite behind you that gives you that ability to understand. Okay?
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, you get your home back. You can be restored back to your original state. And then, you know, while you're going through that process of doing that, you can then join your case. First, you want to challenge the jurisdiction and then join the case after you challenge the jurisdiction. You can join it. You can actually join it beforehand and then update it as we go. We'll figure something out for that.
Okay. So when I challenge, it will be the first court that foreclosed on the case.
Right. I'm sure it was probably a town court or a village court or what kind of court?
County court. County court.
Okay, so it's a county court. All right. And did you hear the words non-judicial foreclosure or anything like that?
It was judicial, but really, the due process was being violated and no jurisdiction.
No. They make it look like it's judicial, but it's a non-judicial foreclosure. Was there a trial? Was there a trial?
No.
Okay. Non-judicial foreclosure. They just make it look because you're going to a court to get the papers signed and things moved over. So you got to you got to go over after the judge. You got to go after the president and of the company or the CEO, depending on who is pushing it. Okay, you got to find that out. And those are the two individuals you go after. And it needs to be moved into a state court, because that court can't make a decision on that. They already believe that they have jurisdiction. So you move it into the state court. And as you're doing that process, you can also move it, connect it to our case, and then we'll see where we go as time goes on with that.
Okay, so with challenging the jurisdiction and moving to the state court, would that be the court in Kansas?
Inside the paperwork, it tells the judge that they already believe they have jurisdiction, so they can't decide the jurisdiction. It has to be decided by the next very first court of record above them. Okay, so that would be the state court, and so you move it there. Now they should move it because you're in the paperwork. It tells them they don't have the jurisdiction. Number one, once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. They can't decide it. It's got to be done by a judge on the upper court above them, even if it's an appellate court. If you were in the state court, you move into the appellate court. And then they, if they don't push it or follow it through, then you got to move the case. That's where people fail. When they do something in the court, And the court doesn't move accordingly the way you're expecting it to move, the way they should lawfully move, and they kind of just steamroll you back in and ignore you and keep going and keep drilling against you. Well, at that point, you have to do something. Because if you don't have these people on the run, you know, they got to be on the offense. You're the defense. I mean, you got to be on the defense. You got to be on the offense. So you have to be offending them. They have to be defending themselves. If you're on the defense, you're losing. If you're on the offense, you're winning. So okay. When the court doesn't do what has to be done, well, what do I do next? If you don't know, well, then you can come back and ask that question, and we'll tell you the next thing to do. And everything's a process and a procedure. Step one, step two, step three, all until you get it accomplished.
Okay. So do I need to, when I file the, challenging of the jurisdiction in Leavenworth, Kansas, and trying to move it into the Kansas court, the state court in Kansas, or in Missouri?
Well, yeah, you know, you got a county. If you're in a county court, okay, that county court is probably a court of record, but it's operating unlawfully, and therefore you're in a jurisdiction's unknown. You didn't get your due process, okay? So you got to move it to the next case above the county court, which should be the state court, okay? If you go look up, go out to the courts. Let me see. You'd go out to Missouri court structure. Okay, put that in Google. Missouri, you're in Missouri, I think, right? Yeah. Missouri court structure. Kansas court structure. Okay, Google that, and then you'll get a diagram. You'll be able to find a diagram as you hunt through those pages. You'll find. And you'll get to see a diagram on the structure of the courts, okay? And I'm sure the next court above the county is the state. That's where it is here in Jersey and Connecticut and places I know.
Okay.
Okay, I don't know of any other court. When you go move in the county, next step up is the state. So that's a court of record. But look it, you're going to challenge the court, and it's up to them to move it over into that court to be heard because it must be decided. You're telling the court you can't move forward. This case must be decided. And it can't be decided by you. It must be decided by the next level up, which is a court of record. And as long as they don't move it, that court case can't go nowhere. Now, they may try to rule on that and say, I'll make the decision. Now, we have the jurisdiction. Well, now you got to say, well, no, you don't, and now you got to move it. That's another process which we'd have to teach you. It's already in how to move your case into the federal court. Well, you could do the very same paperwork, just create the state, you move it into the state court instead of the federal court. Now, once the state court comes out, if they agree with the county court and they deny your right of due process, now you got a conspiracy between the judges, and then you also got the individual who filed the fraudulent papers, which is the companies that are trying to take your mortgage over, okay, now you bring all of three of those into the federal court, and now you're going to chase them for damages.
Okay.
And restoration. The key thing is restoration. But also, you'll be able to go after them for, let's say, $1,000 face value real money, okay, which is about $18,000, okay, for each violation of your whatever rights. Your right of due process by 3 times 18,000 and so on.
Okay. All right.
Start your studies. Go get your stuff together, and then you can come back and ask more questions.
Okay. Thank you, John.
You're welcome. Okay. Let us take our next caller. Next question. Cynthia. How are you doing, Cynthia, from Massachusetts?
Oh, hi. Hi, John.
Hey.
Oh, I'm glad it took a while for me to get on because I was, like, so upset earlier. Whenever you read Title 18, I start having reactions because I really feel that that's what was applied in mine and many other people's situation.
Yep.
So
yeah,
anyway.
If you found yourself in federal court, it's probably under 18, yeah. But it could be under 26, too. That's tax.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, along the way, okay, I've been listening and researching and trying to, you know, understand what the heck's going on, right? And so, like, today, I was listening to this YouTube video by this guy named William Mount. Have you heard of him? Well, anyway, he has the Mount, M-O-U-N-T.
Okay, yeah.
And it's not like I 100% believe in what he's saying, but, you know, he does ask everybody to pray for Trump and everything, so sounds Christian. E. But he was, you know, talking about
walking around with a Bible. But go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, anyway, he was saying that talked about the president being in England right now and said that, you know, that Washington D.C. territorial thing down there. It's a corporation and the Queen owns it. So, and then mentioned Circle, which is tied to.
Well, yeah, you know, you got to remember there are three
yeah.
entities that control the world, okay? And, yeah. and there's a lot of truth in what they're saying, but you definitely don't want to make your argument in that way. But in any event, there is a three-star flag, okay? And you will find them in three places. You'll find one in Washington, D.C. You'll find one in England, London, okay? And then the third one you'll find in the Vatican. And those are the three powers that control the world. Now behind that, of course, are the families. I understand it's about 200 families, maybe less, maybe between 100 and 200. I don't have that particular answer, but it's somewhere in there, and I would think that is probably correct. And those are the people that control the world. They have every place that's that has been turned into a democracy. We've been pushing other countries since World War II and creating democracies around the world. I believe the number is somewhere around 200. I mean, sounds kind of high, but I believe that is correct, around 200. And so what we have done is we have set the stage for about 200 oligarchies. The United States became an oligarchy back in 1963, you know, of course, the pressure was being put on before that, but they did the final coup when they shot Kennedy, and that's when the takeover of the United States was complete at that point. From that point forward, we have been an oligarchy. President Reagan, for instance, may not have realized that they may have hidden a lot more from him than they would of other presidents. And maybe the early on, you know, Nixon and so on, they kind of knew something was up. But Reagan wasn't really a dummy either, so I know he knew something was up. But some presidents understood it clearly and understood their place. Some presidents, you know, through fear or the inability to do anything about it, had to deal with them. But the United States has become an oligarchy, and that looks like it has ended this past year.
Well, I hope so. I do pray for, you know, remedy, and I do support NLA and, you know, all efforts to turn this thing around. I've been really serious, you know, looking at studying as much as I can.
Yeah, if you really want to come to a real, real good understanding of how we got to where we are today as America, you take our civics course. That civics course is 120 hours of videos and audios, okay? And then, you know, then there's questions in between those things. But it's 120 hours. Do we have about 20 documentaries, and they were done by Ed Griffin, okay?
Uh-huh.
Done by Mr. Griffin, Ed Griffin, I think it was.
Yeah.
Edward Griffin, G. Edward Griffin, that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
It was done by him. He started back, I think his first one that he done was 1959, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an excellent one. I mean, it's kind of old, and, it wasn't very professional, his first one. It just wasn't, there's not a clear documentary on that one that I have been able to find. But nevertheless, the meat inside that documentary is overwhelming. And he starts to lay it out. And from that point forward, he has spent his life really working out and creating documentaries, documenting exactly how America got here. He did an interview with a guy named, what was his name? I forget his name. Gerard, do you remember that guy's name that he interviewed? And he passed away 3-4 months after the interview. He was the chief investigator for the Reese Committee back in the 40s and the 50s. And he was investigating un-American activities taking place within our government. And the interview is about, it's just under an hour. I think it's about, 55, 54 minutes, something like that. But it seems so long. It seems much, much longer. The guy talks very slowly and puts out a lot of things, but he gives you so much information in the little bit that he says. Mm-hmm. And he lays out the story, and he gives the missing piece of information on exactly how we really got from there to here.
Now, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. All these other documentaries that that Griffin had done with this one, of course, there's about 20 of them. You'll have a complete understanding.
Yeah.
Dodd is his name. That was his name.
What's his name?
Dodd, D-O-D-D, I think, or D-O,
okay.
Yeah, D-O-D-D. Norman Dodd, I think.
Okay, and he's on the NLA website?
Take our civics course, and you will get that in there.
I recently did the government by consent course, and I just loved it. You guys did a God bless you all for that. It was so helpful, and I'm trying to encourage other people,
I think it's chapter 6 we're up to. It's going to be about 13 or 14 chapters at least.
Okay.
But we're up to chapter 6. Hopefully soon chapter 7 will follow. Chapter 7 is going to be a big one because it's going to cover the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution. So it's going to be 7A, 7B, and 7C. That'll go up all at one time, hopefully very soon. I finished the Declaration of Independence. I've got most of the Bill of Rights done. And I've got the first section of the Constitution done, Article 1.
Yes.
And I'm working through that. As soon as I get that done, it'll all go up there. And I think before people finish that, we'll have a couple more chapters following right behind. Because a lot of that stuff after that, I've got a lot of stuff written already.
Yes.
But just
I
don't want to put it up in ahead of itself. So it's got to wait till I finish this one, Chapter 7.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed the government by consent. And I'm going to look into the civics courses this week. I really look forward to doing that because it's really helping me in terms of understanding what we lost and what we can get back again. Now, in terms of enjoining, I'm still, trying to sort through it. It's kind of hard for me because the materials online is like really geared toward the present, people who are presently struggling. And, mine's more in the past, but, there's no statute of limitation on fraud. So
no statute of limitation in any common law court. Your court case will be as powerful as the evidence in the court. So if time has weakened your case because people have forgotten, people have passed away and moved away, can no longer be found, and that prevents a court case from going forward. But as long as you have the evidence of the court and it's powerful enough to be able to produce the evidence against the other individual, then absolutely, it could be 50 years old, you can still bring it up. There is no statute of limitation. And again, you can discover you've been defrauded 2, 3, 4 years later and you could have lost your home or anything. And once you discover it, you say, whoa, I've been defrauded. You go file your papers, challenge that jurisdiction.
Yes.
They have to undo everything they did.
Yes. Well, I'm going to have more questions as I go along, but let me just say, is there a possibility to enjoin after you, submitted all the documents? Can you enjoin
afterwards? Yeah, this is the ongoing. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. That's good to know because I'm still – I mean, there's a lot, it's more of like a systemic.
When you can join your case to us, it could be 3 months down the line. We could be really pumping and going, getting things accomplished and even cases taken care of maybe at that point. And then you join in, you're still there. We're going to do what we can do until we can get these courts record open everywhere. And here's the problem. Here is the problem. The people. It's if the people want their liberty back, then they're going to have to step up and take it. If they're not going to step up and take it, then they're not going to get it back. And it starts with the people who are hearing the message, who come to an understanding of the message. Okay? So we will have liberty when we can get people in 3, 4 people in every county, and even if we start off with 1 or 2, we'll eventually get 4. But if we get 4 people in every single county to take on that job, becoming an administrator, to the common law grand juries and trial juries. It's a very rewarding job. It's a career position. It pays a good salary, a very rewarding job on its own because you get to deal with the problems and bring these people back under subjection and get justice for the people in your community, the people who are in your county that come to see the grand jury. People have access to the grand jury because we will give it to them. And we will educate the necessities of a grand jury and necessities of a trial jury within one day, the necessary tools they need in order to become a good jurist or good grand jurist. And we want to free the people in our neighborhood. But again, if we don't do this together as a people, if people don't step up, and even if it's just getting educated, maybe you don't want to take this position, that's fine, but you still need the education in order to get behind and understand. Look, if you don't understand the people, for instance, you vote for, do you go to the voting and do you go and vote and just pull the R buttons all the way down the line, or the conservative buttons, or the Democrat buttons? What do you do? What do you know about these offices? What do you know about these people? Who are these people? Do they know the Constitution? Are they going to protect your unalienable rights? Are they willing to really fulfill their oath when they swear to protect and uphold the Constitution? Are they going to stand up for your rights? Or are they going to try to destroy the Second Amendment? Are they going to try to destroy other powers of the people and rights and unalienable rights of the people? So if we don't know what the heck we're doing, you know, again, people expect to be ignorant and free. Forget about it. Not going to happen.
Yeah, in all fairness, I mean, years ago, you know, I took my liberties for granted.
By the way, we intend on teaching people what the purpose and the jurisdiction and the powers of every single political elected office, and also lay it out in such a way where the people actually decide on whether these people are going to be on the ballot or not. All that knowledge is going to be given to the people. The question is, are the people going to take that knowledge, or are you going to sit there and tweet? Or are you going to read a book and get some knowledge? That's the question. Where are you going to spend your time, tweeting or reading?
Yes. Okay. Now, you had a little discussion about the we the people and what we the people mean. And, it's really wonderful. I mean, I'm a child of the Most High God, so we all have unalienable rights, and that's how I see it, regardless, you know. I think everybody born and naturalized, as you said, American citizen, and it's, you know, it's actually a spiritual thing. But quite honestly, John, over the years of researching, going, you know, all over the place, and I was hearing all these different points of view about it. And so what concerns me is the division going on in this nation. You know, people may not want to get involved with NLA or the We the People because they don't even know what the heck it means. So I'm just wondering if you could just write up really, you know.
Well, let me comment.
And we can market it. We can market it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, let me comment on that. Maybe I'll write a paper on it. But here's some of the bottom line, you know, and we the people. Who are we the people? You know, first of all, who was it? I think it was Franklin who said, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. Okay, and the majority that participates trying to bring back America back to where it belongs and really, you know, are really participating or should be participating, shall I really say, we would be the higher majority because the people believe in the Constitution even though they don't understand it. But they've been living the effects of having a Constitution. The liberties have been delivered onto us even though we don't articulate them well. We don't necessarily know what the Bill of Rights say from, you know, 1 through 10 maybe. We don't understand the Constitution, the Articles, what they say about the powers and the authorities and the jurisdictions of this branch, that branch, and the other branch. But nevertheless, we've been living under it enough that it's been expressed around us, and we continue to express those liberties. And that's why it's been so hard for them to destroy America. this world would have been long gone if America didn't have the Bill of Rights. We would have been done, fried, and forget about it. There'd been no Trump. There'd be no liberty movements. There'd be no National Liberty Alliance. None of that would be we'd be gone a long time ago. What that document, which is a covenant with God, starting with the Declaration of Independence, is the key thing that has kept us free. And God has blessed us with liberty. He's cursed us to some degree, but he hasn't destroyed us. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and return and repent, I will heal their land and I will heal them. I'm paraphrasing that part of the Bible, but generally that's what it says. Now, who are we the people? Okay. The Bible is clear on who we the people are ultimately. And, you know, we go into the Bible, it goes back to Jacob, okay? And Jacob, you know, he wrestled with God, and his name was changed to Israel. Now, Jacob is a picture, really, of the people in the church, the people who call themselves Christian, okay? That's who Jacob is, okay? Israel, you know, remember when Moses went to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go," he said, "Let my people Let my people Israel go," okay? Now, Israel is a name, okay, that identifies with the body of Christ. Jesus Christ is Israel, okay? And the body of Christ is Israel. So the true Israel, you know, those people who are born again, who have a very close and daily, day-by-day relationship with God, okay? So you have Israel, which is the body of Christ. You have Jacob, which is the corporate church, which also is connected to Israel. And then God speaks about those who are interested in cleaving to Jacob. They're non-believers. They could be a Jew. They could be anybody. But the ideals, the idea, the teaching, the morality that comes from that, they agree with a lot of it. And they cleave to Jacob with that. Okay, so that's the picture, really, ultimately, of America, as much as it is with the church. But there are a lot of people that are not in the church, but agree with the moralities maybe. And we're not talking about the church in the corner here. We're talking about the true church of God, which is the body of Christ, the collective people of people, you know, whether it's the corporate body or the spiritual body. Now, without getting too much more into the Bible on this, in general, the same thing is in America. We have people who are very strong Christians, have a good relationship with God, mm-hmm. who want to step up and bring this thing back. And that's what we're doing. But we have a lot of people who are corporate part of that thing. It may not be so strong, but they're Christian in name, and they kind of agree with the things, and they may be working things out. That's between them and God. And then those who cleave to the idea. So that's who we the people are, really. People who really are generally, you know, bringing forward. And there's more of them collectively. When you bring these three groups together, there's more of those people than there are of any other. It's all a matter of stop tweeting and get reading. And, you know, tweeting has a place, of course. Trump uses it, and it's a good venue for him to get his word out to the people. And it's okay for us to move about, but, my God, people spend so much time doing that, they don't even read a book, you know?
But I like, you know, how you defined it as American citizen, anybody born or naturalized. You know, some of us, you know, may have been naturalized, as some of us were born, you know, on this land. You know, I mean, there was a time, as you know, people weren't really living up to, you know, the dictates of God, but, you know, they kind of wised up, and actually it was the church before they got caught up in the 501c3s who really raised up and, you know, started this whole anti-slavery abolitionist stuff, you know. So I just feel like we're all kind of like in that position now, and that anybody born or naturalized and on this land, this nation, you know, is entitled to, I mean, I think everybody around the world is, but I'm just saying this nation, American citizen.
Any person who steps a foot on this soil and ends up in a court, no matter what the condition may be, whether it's something they brought into court, maybe someone brought against them, or a criminal thing, it doesn't matter. Anyone, any of those people fall under the same rights that you and I have, because the rights are unalienable. They are not given to us by the government, and it's not a select group of people. It's for anybody who is a people.
Yes.
But we got to move
yes.
on to the next call.
Yes, I want to thank you, and I hope you can just kind of write it, because it'll just help to market what NLA is doing. You know, I think so. I think it'll be helpful, because there is divisions running, as you know, out there. And also, I hope you do post the common law trust instructions.
Right. Yeah, I will do that. It's just a matter of getting time to do it. It's not a priority,
yeah.
but it is something that yeah. people should have, and I'll get to it as soon as I can.
Okay.
I got to spend some... It's been a while since I've exercised that and created a trust, but it's pretty simple, and I'll be able to write some basic instructions and put all the information together that I have
yeah.
on it.
And thank you so much, all the leadership for what you're doing. And I'm just praying, and it can get a lot of people praying for all the initiatives that you all are doing. So God bless you all.
Appreciate it. Godspeed to you, too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, next caller. Thanks, Cynthia. Okay, next caller is Peter from New York. You got the mic.
Hi, everybody.
You're down in the Texas County area, Peter. Is that who you are?
Yep, it's me.
Yep, how you doing?
Great. I wanted to bring up a new group of racketeering bastards that we may be able to add either to the same lawsuit or articulate something new. But I want to bring up the town architects and engineers and the town lawyers. Anybody that has been doing, ever had to do a project, or if they're doing a new business in their town, or anybody that's going before their town planning boards, they're being extorted. And it's so bad where if you, and they're holding up people, like it's, you know, by having to come back for revisions and revisions and revisions. Especially a lot of codes are day-to-day, every day, it's the same house being built, and yet they would like to have continual revisions so that the architects and engineers can continue billing and holding everybody up and obstructing and holding everybody back, and then you got to pay, you get frustrated, you got to pay. So this is a group I'd like to focus on is town engineers are extorting all the towns out there, and I see, like, in New York, as we move forward from Westchester moving up to the counties further north, I'll give you one example of something that I think is outrageous. If you were to fill in an old swimming pool, it is now in the town of Wappingers that you have to have a new topo done to reclaim your land. Now, this is outrageous, to have a surveyor come in to say that your land is flat again where your old pool was is outrageous. These are costs that should not be added to homeowners' expenses. We've already paid taxes, and these are cut and dry things. Now, of course, we understand that some people are do things that do upset problems, but you can have the building inspector come out and say, do it like this, do it like that. And we don't have to have these exorbitant engineer fees,
look,
engineers coming out.
I agree with you, and I have some knowledge here because I was involved in getting subdivisions through and building a lot of, infrastructure. And this whole thing goes back to the town. It starts off, this is where it starts from. It starts from the greed of the town. Once the town starts to understand that they can make money here by doing certain things, particularly with people who are builders, developers, that they can, really rape them, ultimately bring them over the coals, get a lot of money. And you're right, the cost factors get pushed over to the people buying those homes. It starts off with these little towns deciding, well, let's open up a court, let's get our own police department going, so on and so forth, because there's a lot of money to be made in all these code violations, okay? And then with the building inspector, it's the same thing, getting things going there, trying to get approvals. I remember this one project was going through the approval process, it was in 10 years in the process trying to get through, and the people who had put this together eventually sold it, and they sold it to another developer. who hired me, and I was involved with going through the process. It took us about a year to get it through, or more. And what they were looking for is payoffs, okay? They were requiring, okay, if you're going to build this subdivision here, we want this and we want that and we want the other thing. They may wanted a playground here, or they wanted this or that. The developer wants to put a playground in, that's fine. But if you're going to force them to do it, then that's wrong. They shouldn't be that. But you're right. Look at topography to begin with. They work off usually the aerial topography, which is purchased. And changing the topography on an area that's not going to be further developed, per se, other than the fact that it's subdivision cut out and you just filled out a pool, it is insane. You know, I know as a builder, when I was building, especially in these places that are very difficult to deal with, I would hire an architect particularly, or an architect engineer, and have them take over the control of the job, and once we get the building permit, we kick the inspector out and everybody else out, because we'll have the engineer and the architect do the certifications. And at the end of the day, they put it out there, and you're keeping the fingers of the building inspector, you know, which is really an extension of the town, out of the process as you're moving forward. That's how I dealt with things like if I did something in the city of Poughkeepsie or the town of Poughkeepsie, which was very difficult to work in, or even going down into other cities, city down in Beacon where I'm at in Dutchess County. You're in Dutchess County, so you know these places.
Right.
So that's one. But yeah, there's a lot of things. That's something that needs to be fixed, and it can be fixed, but it wouldn't be something on our agenda at this point.
I think there would be a lot of allies for NLA. All businesses have to face this, and they know they're being extorted. And I believe that more and more people that know that there is someone saying something. You are
This is how you beat it. It is a simple process to beat, and I'll tell you how you beat it, okay? It's what the towns extend and put onto the developers and require the developers in order to get the approval. It's really, blackmailing them, or there's a different word, not blackmailing, extorting them. They're extorting them because they want money to do this or to do that. And if you don't do this or do that, we're not going to give you the approval, okay? And in order for them to do that, the town attorney has to take you to court. Well, it's a simpler way to deal with that, okay? They deny the jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction, period. End of subject, go away. As long as the developer or the builder follows the criteria of the laws and the regulations that are already set in place, that is construction, okay, then you're okay. And you can keep the town out completely again. You know, I did a development of about 35 units in this one. On that development, we did allow the town inspector to come in, and they were inspecting holes, and they wanted us to do stupid things like fill these certain ditches up quickly when we haven't finished work inside them. You know, we'd put up the barriers, and of course you prevent people from coming onto the land, and so on. But they were starting to require things that we'd have to dig them back up at another time. We'd have to be careful because we didn't, we have whatever it is in there. It could be pipe, it could be drainage pipe, water pipe, sewer pipe, or whatever. And so we just got rid of them all together and then told them to leave. We got the engineer, he's going to do all the certification, and you can come back at the end and take a look then. And they can't come onto the property at that point. And so if they try to push it in the court, you deny the jurisdiction and you move on. So that's probably the best way for them to deal with it, very simply, deny jurisdiction.
But, again, I do have friends. They still can't get their COs. They've even gone to higher courts. A Supreme Court has told the town, give this man his CO. Everybody is obstructing and making sure that they're not doing anything timely. They're really just dragging their feet. So
right. Well, the CO for other people understand what you're talking about, a certificate of occupancy.
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity for NLA to find allies and contributors, people to help us with our cause, because and maybe we could find a place on our page, on our website, where contractors, businessmen trying to do things that are fighting against towns that there is an ally. We're your ally. The common law is your ally.
If they're refusing to give them a CO, okay, mm-hmm. and you take them to court and the court files for you, that forces the town to do the right thing. They don't have a choice. Maybe, you know, I don't know what's up with the lawyer on that one. I mean, it's a matter of pushing the enforcement. Okay, and
lawyers
know how to enforce
it. There is no one that will enforce for the contractor.
Oh yeah, the sheriff will. Oh yeah, the sheriff will. I'll tell you what. I'm in Dutchess County myself. If you want to make a connection with these people, maybe I can get and talk with them or get to understand their problem. Maybe I can give them some solutions.
I do
okay?
think this is actually a good case for us to get involved.
Well,
in
if it can benefit our movement, then that would be fine, you know?
All right, I will contact you during the week, and we can put some, because I know Butch Anderson is very interested in this particular case, because his hands have been tied, and he's mad.
Right.
Our sheriff is mad about this, and I believe that, you know.
Talking about Anderson?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, look, you got to get a hold of me during the week. I'm pretty sure you have my cell number. Give me a call,
and
we'll talk.
So if anybody else wants to bring this subject up in the future, I believe that we may find some allies for this and some solutions. So I'll talk more with you then.
All right,
thanks. Thank you so much, Jim.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, let's take our next caller. It is a nameless person, 347 area code. I'm trying to think 347. Where's 347? That's familiar.
Hey, Hey, John, it's me, Dwayne. I spoke with you earlier today.
Oh, what's your first name?
Dwayne.
Dwayne, yes, I remember the conversation.
Yeah, pertaining to the child support issue.
Right.
So I have a it's been going since 2006, and I challenged I filed some papers a couple of months ago upstate New York. My case is in Queens, downstate. But I filed the papers in upstate New York, Seneca Falls, and I finally got a response a couple of weeks ago.
What, did you say Wappinger Falls? What? Where?
It's in Seneca Falls, Finger Lakes.
Okay. Yeah, that's way up there. Go ahead.
Yeah. And went back to the family court and decided to try to get something moving. And then got a response from him, but he dismissed all of my everything I filed. And what I filed was a demand to vacate. I did something pertaining to Karam non judis. And some due process violation of due process violations.
How did you move that through the court? You know, you just filed the papers, and then what'd you do?
I just went and I filed. I actually got the there's a guy on I was watching following on YouTube a retired cop Rick W. He's a retired cop and he's been fighting. I think, from what I understand, he beat his case and he's helping other people out. But what happens is as people use his paperwork, they're changing up the rules of the game. As they use his paperwork and they get victories, they're changing up the rules as they go along.
They do the tighten up and they start teaching the new problems in their judge school. You know, judges, for instance, especially judges on the lower level that are elected, maybe town, village, and city, and so on. Those judges, a lot of them aren't even lawyers, and they go to judge school, usually a week or two to judge school. And I'm sure every so often, maybe once a year, they have a day, you know, catch up, new things, and that kind of stuff. And they start to teach them about people like us to come into the courts, what to do and how to handle them. And, yeah, they shake things up and change things around and teach them different ways to frustrate us. The problem, and again, we went through this same problem of frustration. We would be with cases sometime involved, we'd be in court literally a year, okay, going to the same town court, month in, month out, same thing, same problem, moving to the next time. And same thing Crystal has been going through, you know, with the house, trying to take a home away and do a non-judicial foreclosure. Same thing. They weigh you down, they keep moving. You see, if you don't keep coming into court, they can move things a lot quicker. If you keep coming into court, they keep frustrating and moving until you get so frustrated, maybe ill, have a heart attack, because literally a lot of the people, you know, 50, 60 years old, and they're taking their homes away, and, you know, they're coming to the twilight of their life, and they may start to suffer certain problems, and a heart condition for stress is one, stroke from stress is another, and they rely on these things. I knew someone recently, 2 years ago, as a matter of fact, and they were losing their home to a non-judicial foreclosure, and I told them not to move. I said, stay there. I passed by their house all the time 2 years later, and they still haven't been able to do anything with that house because it takes so many years to go through the process, of changing everything and moving things and eventually bringing it up for sale and so on. And all that time, you could be battling it, and you could be living in a house another 6 years, to 6 years, keep pushing it along. But you can end the whole thing and get rid of it just by challenging jurisdiction and telling them to take a hike. And that's that.
She told me that I have a certain amount of time. I think 30 days to appeal it.
Yeah, you have 30 days to file a notice of appeal. Okay? Let me make a note of that. I will place the notice of appeal. Let me make a note of this. Notice of appeal. Intent to appeal. I will place that up on the website. If you up on nationallibertyalliance.org, you go there and you highlight due process and go down and get into the due process page of instructions where we have the different forms, challenging jurisdiction, how to move your case to the federal court for cause, so on and so forth. And I'm going to put a new paper up there. I'm pretty sure I could do this quickly because I know I've done a couple of them already. Notice of intent for appealing. Now, once you do that in New York, you then have 8 months. I think I told you this. You have 8 months to perfect that. So you got 8 months. You can become gold in this thing and become highly educated in 6 months. And then you go in and kick butt. You know, so you can shut things down for 8 months by just filing that notice of appeal in New York. Now, in other places, I don't know. On the federal level, if you give them a notice for appealing on the federal level, I think that's like 4 months or 3 months. I forget what it was. I've done one of them too. And so you just have to look and see what the structure is on the appellate process. And again, it buys you time, and it gives you time to put things together. So I'll put one of them things up. Different states, people have to go and find out what the appellate process is and how much time. It may be less than New York is quite long. It's 8 months. Other places might be 3 months or 6 months. But the notice of appeal is only one page. That's all it is. You're just notifying everyone you intend on appealing this. Then you have 8 months to perfect that paper. Okay. If you don't get it done in 8 months, the other side can shut it down and have it defaulted, and you're out of there.
When we say the other side, I mean, we're not referring to the mother because...
Well, that's a whole different story. When you're dealing, you're dealing now with a family court system they're the worst Nazis going. I don't know of any more sicker, most destructive, and Satanistic, I don't know, all those evil words you can think of than the family court system. Okay. You need to get out of there. You need to challenge their jurisdiction to begin with. You start there.
This isn't trying to get out of the obligation of taking care of my child. This is just like another gentleman I was listening to your one of the recordings from a couple of weeks ago, and it's just a vindictive mother, and she's never been on welfare or anything, public assistance, and she's only filed one injunction against me years ago, back in 2015. And she never showed up. I didn't show up. They put a bench warrant out. So they threw it out because she didn't show up. I guess she did that to clear her conscience. But it's just been a lot of games playing. I've been playing. Now, I'm not currently in New York State anymore. I'm now in Pennsylvania. I just moved here a couple of weeks ago. And that's just from circumstance due to this, you know, the situation. I've just been displaced, bouncing around. I've been off and on homeless. I don't even know how would I do this in Pennsylvania? Will I be able to mail it into the court? You know, mail documents?
You should be able to. You got to figure out what you're going to do with your children. How many children you have?
Just one.
Okay. How often do you see that child? How often do you want to see that child?
I see her so bad, and I haven't seen her since 2007.
But being out in Pennsylvania, and they're being where? In New York? Where are they at?
Yeah, they're in New York still.
So that's a problem there. The distance becomes a problem. I mean, look, at first order of business you want to do is try to find a way to, get together with your ex and sit down and have a cup of coffee or something and say, look,
that's
look,
not gonna happen.
A problem. Okay, well, it doesn't matter whether it happens or not. What matters is you start to try to make it happen. Sometimes you may be surprised. I would start off writing a paper, okay, just between you and her, just start making a list of things and what you think would be right and making an agreement. Get it all written down on paper concerning the care for your child and the fact that you need to have some kind of a reasonably decent relationship with her, at least as a friend, so your child doesn't suffer in this thing. You put down on paper the arrangements of what you think you can afford and what you should be paying and helping to pay for that child's upbringing and so on and so forth. You put it all together and you start there. Now, you give it to her, and if she just, disregards it and rejects it or whatever, well, then you certify it by mailing it to a certified and putting it on the record to begin with. Because as you move through the process of taking control, because you can start to move through that process by starting to challenge jurisdiction, okay, then you move through the process, you already got your own plan. You don't need the state involved. And that's what you could tell them. Look, you're not my child's parent. I'm the parent. And this child needs me. I'm the father. This child needs this girl you got or a boy?
Girl.
Girl, okay. So your daughter needs a mother, needs a father, and the state can't fill those roles. Take a hike and challenge the jurisdiction. Move it up the line. But do the right thing. Get it recorded. You can file it in the county, your agreement, so that it's something that is tangible for her to take on, and just move forward. There's
probably
a lot of things
county.
Involved with the fact that they've given your child a lawyer, and they've totally destroyed the family. They put everybody against everybody. So that's a big problem.
Yeah.
We're trying to work that out. But it starts with what I'm just saying. Meanwhile, you need to get educated.
Oh, yeah. But will I file it in what county, though? I can file it here in another state.
Well, that's a problem because you're far away and you're not available for your daughter either. So you're kind of stuck there, away, far away, How many miles are you in Pennsylvania from where you were? 50 miles, 100 miles? How far away are you?
I think 123 miles. But
yeah. So, I mean, what are you expecting, to visit once a month, once a weekend, every 2 weeks?
I miss my daughter grow up. So the most important year is I'm willing to just move on. I just want my life back. I need my driver's license back. I just want to move on so I can be able to work and enjoy the rest of my years.
Well, that is the other thing they do to people. They expect you to pay money, and they'll put you in jail if you don't pay the money, but then they'll take your driver's license away. They'll do all kinds of stupid things which prevent you from working, even throwing you in jail for a while, and you can lose your job. And they're destructive, and they have no intentions. They have absolutely no intentions of assisting or helping any family. Their own purpose is to destroy the family and make money. And that's all it is. I see nothing else valued in that system at all. That system needs to be taken away from the court as a court, and maybe being overseen as overseen by the court, but and it has to be administrative. It has to be agreeable, but it needs to be people who are going to truly arbitrate the situation and be seriously honest and try to do for the benefit of the child, particularly. That's where it should stem up. Making sure the child has a mother, making sure the child has a father, making sure that both parents are doing their thing. And it's not a matter of forcing. It's a matter of sitting down and counseling and bringing them to the agreement and understanding of the things that are necessary because you became a parent. And now you need to be doing these things. You have to change the people's minds and give them the process. And people will go along with that. I'm all for that. And I'm sure most everyone will be for that. And then you're going to have something that could be successful and healthy for the whole family, you know. And, you know, they should be trying to bring parents together and say, look, if you hate each other, that's fine. Get over it, okay? You have a child there. Establish a friend relationship with, you know, your ex and be parents and support each other. Work out the details of how you want to raise that child, religious-wise, morally-wise, so on and so forth. You know, that's what we need.
Well, I'll be in Philadelphia in a couple of months, so I'll be able to travel back to the city by train or bus. So I'll probably be able to go to Queens and follow by the appropriate documents.
Well, you're in the toughest place. You're down in New York City in Queens, and yeah, that's a tough place to deal with. So you know. It's like talking to the rock down there. You know, you have to figure out what your plan is, what you really want to do, and how you want to do it. You know, how old is your daughter now?
She'll be 16, the 21st this month.
Okay, so you've missed a lot of her growing up, I presume.
Man, I missed everything, most of it.
All right, well, look, put it together and start doing the right thing. Establish a relationship. It starts with the mother, too, you know, and then with the child, deal with the court. So, you know.
The mother won't allow
Well, get an education because you're going to need an education to deal with this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm working on it. Thank you.
Okay. We got other people, so we got to move on, okay?
All right.
All right, do what you got to do when you have questions. Get some education going here. When you have questions, come ask the questions, and we'll give you, you know, some possible solutions and more homework until you get to understand all this stuff. All right, thanks. All
right. Thank you.
Okay, let's go to our next caller. Next caller is from West Virginia. Is it Annie from West Virginia?
Hey, Annie, hi.
How you doing?
I'm okay. I heard some of the questions, and a gentleman just called in about pretty much being robbed by the county or the township, and I'm just wondering if my question is going to be like borderlining his, because I got a reminder today that my car should be, my registration is going to expire in a couple of months, and I need to I need to take care of that. And on the form, it says, include a copy of your insurance, I'm sorry, proof of insurance, and also a copy of proof of property taxes from the county tax assessor's office. And
I don't understand. What was it? Include a copy of what taxes?
A copy. West Virginia, this Wood County will not renew your driver's license without proof of payment of the insurance and proof of payment of property taxes from the county tax assessor's office. And I have never seen that before.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means. But, I mean, what if a person is renting? They're not paying taxes. What do they do then?
I've never seen it before, and I was just baffled because I said, wow, I mean, I don't understand what one has to do with the other. I know cars should be insured, and there's, you know, you should provide.
Well, why don't you go down to motor vehicles and ask them exactly what that means, what are they looking for, and then maybe I can help you with that if you've got an understanding of that, because I have no clue on that. I'd never heard of that. You know, insurance is an important thing. Everyone should have insurance. It's a responsibility. If you injure someone, you need to be able to deal with that problem, and insurance is the way to deal with it. There are other ways. You know, you can put up, collateral up against, you're driving. I forget what they call it. We had some people who did something like this. I'm trying to remember what they called it. Well, anyway, but I'm just saying, if you didn't want to get insurance, if you can put collateral up to prove that you can take care of someone gets injured up to a certain point, you can do that. But other than that, I don't know. You'll have to go find out what they're talking about. It may just be a misunderstanding from your point of what that
really is. It says it's on the application. It's saying, please attach proof of payment of property taxes.
Let me ask you a question. Are you renting or do you have property?
No, I have property.
Okay. Why don't you just put N/A, not apply?
Well, I think they won't renew your tax if you don't.
Well, do they know that you have property somehow?
I'm not sure how it's done, but I know that I know I paid my property in full, and when I got a notice from the tax assessor's office, I had sent them.
I have no idea what that has to do with the driver's license. I mean, with the registry of the car. Now, what maybe might have happened, okay? And this is something that they do in New York with your driver's license. They threaten you with your driver's license with everything, especially if you're in family.
Okay.
They threaten your driver's license. I mean, what does that have to do with anything? But
right.
They'll threaten you. There has been a report or something concerning your property, and it's on the paperwork so that they can get you, because maybe there was a report that you're behind, and they're going to say, well, look, if you don't take care of your taxes, we're not going to go forward and allow you to have a registered car. Of course, that's extortion and has nothing to do with anything, and I don't understand it. I'm wondering if you're misunderstanding it. I really don't know how that could be. Why don't you see if you can get a copy to me? Send a copy of that to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, and I'll take a look at that, see if I can understand what they're talking about, and bring it up next week.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I would do that.
All right. I don't know whether I have an answer, but I'll sure try.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. That's weird, so I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Okay, we got Crystal back again. Crystal, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Crystal, are you there? Hello, Crystal Mac. Crystal going once. Twice. Well, I hate to push through again. We lost to the first time. Crystal, last call for Crystal. Okay, we're going to have to move forward. One more call for Crystal. Dan, 843 area code. You got the mic. Where are you, from the Carolinas, I think?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
How you doing, Dan? I remember your voice.
Thank you. I, like everybody else, had a little complications today. I lost my darn cell phone, and later tonight I found it in the car. I had to go take some lights and spotlights and go through my car, but anyway, I found it. I tried to call in through the computer, but I could never find any phone numbers, but I won't bother you with that. We can talk to Jan or somebody later. But I was going to go on my computer. Nevertheless,
You've been to our Monday night page? Because it has all the information on how to join us.
I have to do that to find the conference numbers and stuff. But let's not get bogged down in that. That's minor compared.
Okay.
I'd like I'd like to get into, it's not what I called in about, but the gentleman that was having such problems a while ago, I don't know whether he's aware, but he has right, since he's the parent, one of the parents, to amend a document having to do with visitation, or he could actually go outright if he gets his feet on the ground planted pretty good. He could go in there and challenge her for, if nothing else, custody, can be a custody battle. One way or the other, he can get in the courtroom to see his child. And then the other things that you said were just paramount. Truth of the matter is, if that gentleman has never found himself where that the state ever paid one penny or a dime or a nickel or a dollar or in the dollars concerning any care for that child, I agree with you, and it's from a heavenly father standpoint, it's not the state's business to be poking their nose, and I'd file, just like you told him, they didn't have jurisdiction. With that said, then there's something else I wanted to mention, too, about these little municipalities that can make people's life very difficult. I know I went through a saga of unbelievable exploitation, being having property on an island, and next door to it is a town that my own family founded, but five people almost threw our families out and took over the town. And they did anything from satellite annexation to coming on our property, trespassing with surveyors for roughly close to a mile down in the coastal waterway heading towards the North Carolina, South Carolina, or head towards South Carolina, Myrtle Beach or whatever, and from my doorstep. And so our neighbors were very taken with this. And so I got them all together. One of them was an attorney. They all asked me to do all the representation, even the attorney. And we battled this particular town. And before it was over with, we got them one night. This is coming to the page four of Paul Harvey's, so I like to say it. We got them to a point to agree that they no longer are wanting to annex our waterfront property for about a mile, starting right across the street from my parents' mailbox, and where I live is a high-riser. And they unlawfully trespassed and kept bringing their town to come to a highway that is between my mother's mailbox and the high rise were across the street. All was standalone property, and so that they could have the word contiguous to then try to then annex from my mother's mailbox, including our homestead about a mile south down, following every homestead all the way down for about a mile on the waterfront on this island. So making a long story short, we went one night in a courtroom. A town meeting, I'll get it right in a minute. And we got them to a point to where we backed them up, and they said, Mr. Stanlin, we've all tabled this. This was the attorney at the one of the five powers to the be for the town, and we are not interested no longer in trying to acquire any of your folks' property. I asked them one thing. I said, would you repeat this and state, is that for the record? And once they said, yes, that's for the record, quesadilla, case closed. And the truth of the matter is that they also were alerted by the state of North Carolina legislators where they had absolutely trespassed on a parish next to me, just up the road. I'm at the waterfront, but just a couple of streets up, they trespassed on a parish, and that parish asked me, there was about 90 to 100 people in there, they asked me again to represent them between two towns. And these two towns are just as crooked as a dog's hind leg. So in closing, nevertheless, at some point, I drafted some documents, made appearances for the parish that was being trespassed on by an...
Was this the case of trespass by a developer or a case of trespass by the town?
It was a town. And okay. The surveyors, and I ran them out of there, because actually it was on my father's Stanley estate. Even the high-risers, that they kept itching and bring all those high-risers in to get close to make the line contiguous to the highway between me and the high-risers, which is just across the street. I ran them surveyors out. I said, listen here. I went out to the surveyors. I ran them out of there. But nevertheless...
Well, their encroachment, was there encroachment for right-of-ways or their encroachment for large parcels of land? What was the encroachment that they were pressing upon?
They sent the truck, they sent this is normal procedure. They'll send a surveyor in, and they will tie in stakes and everything to the land that they are trying to annex, and then they'll put it on their map. And they'll attach it to, and then they'll attach it to what they call their antiguous line that is common to them and common to you. If they can get that line to join up your property, you're in trouble until you know how to fight it. Well, nevertheless, I drafted a document. I said, listen, we're all litigants. We're going to send this certified red tag, green tag, whatever, send it back to this town, and we're going to rebut having any jurisdiction or right to be on this land and be trespassing over on the D. Stanley estate, which is about 830 acres with multiple subdivisions in it. So this particular, they followed suit, and we sent it back to them, and then you will not believe this. A small town was having something similar around Southport, North Carolina, Highway 211 area, and those people down there got ready, and they sent up a complaint, and next thing it went to Chapel Hill, I believe it was, and they had a hearing with the General Assembly. And the General Assembly had several different infractions in the state of North Carolina where these little old towns were coming in and putting unlawful trespasses or involuntary servitude or involuntary annexation is the actual words that you need to hear. So we got a law passed at some point. And I went over there and made my last appearance with this town. I said, look here, you know something? I stood up for one of them there, and that, they didn't like it, but I did. I said, listen, this town hall was going on. I said, I'm surprised with you guys. We have already, these litigants in the D.E. Stanley estate has already rebutted, and you've never given them consideration or backed out of here their parish. And I said, I am really surprised that you guys, you're under the Chapel Hill School of Government and those laws. And you know firsthand that you, whether you violated this or not, would have access, and the Chapel Hill School of Government would send you copies of this memorandum. You clearly trespassed, and you have yet to give any apology back to the people in the parish. And you are still trespassing, and even though we've asked you for a hearing. So we have got them jokers right exactly by the juggler. And there is, I was thinking as when I heard this guy tonight, in closing here, one guy, a researcher out of Delaware, told me about a guy that had similar situation down in Charleston, South Carolina. I believe he's around St. John's Island. And where a town trespassed on his rights and so forth, this guy finally sued that town, that municipality, and he won about $3 million, I believe it was, $2 to $3, but I'm pretty sure it was $3 million. So these are the situations where when I hear every night that I'm on this conference, I hear these individuals crying with their heart out, and I just told myself, you know, I just feel for these people, how they're being hoodooed, hornswoggled is my old word I like to use, and it comes from anywhere from someone like a color of law that is predicated on fines and penalties to do a parent out of his child growing up and having some chance to be reprove himself as a family. And so I really appreciate tonight some of the things that you laid your heart out to this guy and many others too, especially about their homes and so forth. Oh, by the way, this is what I did call in for, and I better close here because there might be somebody else in the queue.
Yeah, we do have a couple other people there.
All right, we better respect that. I know how that is. I heard someone mention about the common law trust, and I know I'm getting down to the final nickel, and I know that I want to give you guys what I think is some type of demand. Since I'm the executor of my, and I won't go but just a second here, because you know by talking to me in the past. And so I want to give some kind of demand and notice to my brother's wife, who now has the documents, has to be a power of attorney. And at the same time, I may have to do a joinder in law as to the similar documents with a county where they won't remove those illegal deeds that don't meet the criteria of the General Assembly. They know firsthand that they're holding up the title. And, of course, I want to do a reverse mortgage. So with all that said, I'd like to speak, if I could, if you can get Jan or possibly contact Mr. Brent and also the other guy, that guy up there in Philadelphia, because I've got so many cases that needs for recovery, and I've got the evidence, and I won't cause these guys to have to do the due diligence. I have the prima facie evidence as being the executor of my state, and I need to get recovery. So that's kind of it.
So you're talking about a trust?
We mentioned that, and like I say, I want to respect the other people. You know, we mentioned that about a couple of weeks ago.
There's the difference, there's a way to do what's called a common law trust, and the state doesn't get involved in any way, shape, or form. The only unfortunate thing you got to do is you do have to deal with the federal government getting the VIN, what do they call it, a VIN number? Not a VIN number. They call it I forget what they call that. I forget what they call that number. But you need that federal number in order to open up an account in a bank.
Okay.
And that's that's the only connection you have with the government. But
that is so helpful. It might be an EIN number, but anyway, I see your point.
Yes, and that's what it is, EIN number. So that's the only involvement. If you created a trust, it's a common law trust, and there was any connection with the process with the government or filing with the government or filing with the state, then it's not a true common law trust. Just so you know, there's a difference, and I've learned how to open a trust many, many years ago, and I got the information on it, and I did do, of course, a trust, a common law trust, with the National Liberty Alliance. And I'm going to post this up on our page for anybody who wants to, look at it and see once what they want to do with a trust. There's lots of things you can do with this. Definitely you want to create a trust if you're dealing with your parents who are elderly and they've accumulated a lot of assets and different things over time. You want to move everything to a trust with them and for them.
Right.
And actually, depending, there's lots of ways you can set this up. And the same thing for people, just their parents with children, and no matter how old they are, they can create a trust in order to have a situation.
Sure.
To keep the government fingers and hands out of your business.
I'm aware of that. Just to give you about 10 seconds here. The same island, 830 acres, my father's father, D. Stanlin, paid off all the mortgage for that property and has yet his estate or my grandfather or my father's estate has yet to be vindicated or whatever, and there could be a sizable, trust right there set up for recovery of those funds. And I thought about this, and I'll talk to you sometime further later. But the idea of whether or not a common law trust will interfere with the reverse mortgage process is what, you know, we were last left. And I don't know. I need to talk with Brent and maybe that guy up in Philadelphia. Let's leave it at that. You remember it, and let's go to some of the other people because I know how it is. I mean, I think we can, if Brent or some of those guys can call me out or get out with me through Chan, I'd certainly appreciate it.
Okay, all right. Appreciate the call, Dan, and we'll talk.
Absolutely. Yeah, we got other people on the queue. Thanks, sir.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to a caller. We've got two callers left. The next caller is from Pennsylvania. Don't have a name. Give us your first name and you're from Pennsylvania. So your first name, 570 area code. Go right ahead.
Hello. Yo. Hello. Hello. Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
We got you.
Hi, okay. Yeah, I was calling because I'm having an issue. I talked to you before about this PFA and this custody thing. You know, my wife left 2 months ago with the kid, and I missed that hearing. Attorney also missed the hearing. But they transferred custody to her temporarily, I guess, or permanently for now. I got to act on this, and I have to go back in to get the PFA thrown out. The judge didn't get it on me, but she continued it till August, and I need to get it out so I can do counseling with the wife for the divorce she filed.
What does PSA stand for?
The PFA is a protection from abuse, but the judge tried to get it on me, but she couldn't really get it on me because she didn't have the criteria.
Did you have any kind of a conversational relationship with your ex?
I have nothing. I've been cut off from my wife and granddaughter entirely for the last 2 months, and I have to act on this.
Okay. Now, this is for your child or your grandchild?
No, this is for my granddaughter that we had for 13 years, and my wife, we're married 18, and my 35-year-ago ex got involved with her and kind of convinced her to leave me, and so she's manipulating the whole situation here and trying to get custody of the granddaughter.
Okay, that's a real difficult one, although, look, it's a difficult one for the statutory process when you're in equity courts. It's extremely difficult. It has more authority, of course, than the common law court. You're not going to get into a common law court yet. You know, it's just I don't see it happening very well. Of course, that's what we're working to get done. Once we get one really open and start moving and exercising the authority of a natural law court, then that will help us to wedge open, you know, throughout the United States, you know, because we're going to do things on a federal level. When you win on the federal level, you can execute it quite easily on the state level.
Right. Well, what I need right now is I need to get back into this. I need to take an action and get rid of this PFA, you know, because I can't. I had to get an attorney on the divorce action because by law you have 3 counseling sessions, and I'm trying to get back in contact with my wife. You know, if she wants to go,
that's
fine.
I don't understand the situation. Let me just ask a couple of questions, and I'll try to give you some ideas.
Sure.
I can't get into the details of the case because, you know, you want to deal with it. You got to get it someplace where it'll be constructive, okay? That's the point.
So my
question really is trying to understand your case enough so that I can maybe suggest a way to try to get, you know, into a constructive fashion.
Right.
So you're married. And you and your wife was raising your granddaughter? Is that what was going on?
My wife and I married 18 years, and for the last 13, we've had custody given to us of my granddaughter, who's a great kid. Everything was fine with her. She's great in school.
How old is your granddaughter?
She's 13 now.
Okay, so let me get this straight now. You're married. You got a wife. You're married. You had a child, and that child had a child, and that child right now, which is your grandchild, is 13. Was that the mother of the child or the father of the child that you ended up custody with from?
Well, no. When I was 16 years old, I was with my ex there for a year. We had a child, okay? She went and had an illegal adoption done, kept her from me for 13 years. Then she came back into my life after she was 13 years old. She had a daughter. Her daughter we ended up taking the child, which is my granddaughter, because she couldn't take care of her. Okay.
Okay, but the question is how did you take the fiduciary authority over the child? Did the court give it to you, or did
children
you just take
call.
It on because you had an agreement and the no, father was?
Children and youth called us out of the blue one day and said, listen, you know, your daughter had her daughter and she can't take her and she cannot go to the grandmother's house with her because we have bad reports from the hospital about emotional abuse.
Okay, so the family, this is a family decision and everything took place inside the family, no courts involved.
No. The courts involved. Children placed my granddaughter with me and my wife.
I'm sorry, say that again? You broke up.
Children and youth had called us to place them with us. And when they needed a place to go, they would have went to foster care. You know, my granddaughter would have went to foster care. So we took her. We raised her. We fought it out in custody and all that kind of stuff and closed their case. So we had 13 years, and the other grandmother had visitation. My daughter's mother had visitation, and she's been wanting to get custody of her. So I believe she manipulated my wife out of my life here, my granddaughter.
Now what you're saying is the mother is trying to take custody now?
No, the mother's mother. The grandmother.
So the grandmother from the other side is trying to take custody.
There's me and my wife, and then there's my daughter and her mother, who is the other grandmother.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, that gets kind of touchy in a kind of a situation. You got the mother who's very much involved, which is your daughter, okay?
She's pretty disabled. She's pretty disabled, so she really isn't.
Let me just get the picture here because I still don't understand the picture in order to give you some thoughts. But you got a child that, first of all, your child had a child, okay?
Yes.
That child now is 13. And that your daughter is perfectly happy with that child being with you and your wife.
Oh, yes, she was. Yes, she was.
Hold on. Let me get this whole picture because we're running out of time. We have one other person in the queue.
Okay.
So then you have the other side of the family, which is the father of the child. What involvement does the father of the child have?
The father's not involved. The father's not really involved. I mean, I've tried to get him involved, but
never been involved from day one or what?
Nah, he didn't. We thought it was his brother's kid at first, and he didn't step up, and then we found out it was his, and he hasn't really been involved.
But let's get away from all that. My point is his involvement. He never has had an interest in the child.
No.
Okay, so there's no interest in the child from that person, and I presume the possibility there is questionable who the father truly is, unless it's been proven for sure.
No, I believe it is his. I do believe it is his, because his brother had a blood test.
Is the name on this birth certificate, has that been proven?
That is his last name. His last name. No, it is his last name.
The child has his last name.
I'm sorry, what?
The child has his last name.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So then that's been established. Okay. But his interests aren't there. Now you got the other grandparents. Now this child has been with you for how many years? Is 13 years old?
13 years.
Okay. Well, that kind of sets the precedence on that. Now the key thing is this: have you decided to talk to the grandparents on the other side to work out arrangements so that they can see the grandchild, maybe come together as a full family, even though dad isn't involved? But
Let me understand. There's my wife and I who's married 18 years, okay? There's my ex from 35 years ago who is the other grandmother, who is my daughter's mother. That's all that's involved in this case. There's my daughter and her mom, and there's my wife and me and the granddaughter. Now, my wife is a step-grandmother, okay, but she took off out of my house with the granddaughter.
Okay,
the step-grandmother
took off with the child.
Yes. Who's my wife? She's my wife.
Right. I understand that. But does she have any kind of, did she take on any kind of legal custody?
We both had custody. We both had joint legal custody.
Okay. So this is a family thing, and that's the most powerful in my appreciation anyway. Yeah, this is a complex thing. I don't even know what to tell you here. But the courts are now involved?
Well, what happened was she went in to file a special release to a judge. I found out about it the next day through the proprietaries. I went and I filed my own. And the judge gave her temporary custody until a hearing. And this was on like April 9th or something.
Where does the child want to be?
Well, the thing is that she's being manipulated, coerced, and alienated right now. This is the same thing that happened with my daughter.
I understand that. I understand that. That could change over time if you can get the situation in hand.
Well, I'm very concerned about them. I think my concern is they're going to be...
At this point in time, where does the child want to be, though?
I don't know, because I haven't been able to talk to her. I haven't been able to talk to my wife.
Here's what you need to do, okay? Here's the only thing you could do. Since you've had legal custody of the child for X amount of years, and now the woman that is your wife is not the blood mother. She's a grandmother. She's step, because this child comes from a marriage before or a relationship before, correct?
No, the child came from my daughter and her boyfriend. Yes, that's where she
right,
came from.
Right, but the woman who is your wife, you're separated from 18 years. You're separated from her now. She's not the bloodline to that child.
She's not the bloodline. No, but she is my wife of 18 years.
Anyway, look at you go into the court. First of all, blood is the whole thing here. And sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes that could be a bad thing too.
I mentioned the blood thing, but the thing is, I married my wife, so now we're blood. You know what I'm saying? So that really,
No. Not to that child. To some degree, look at that child. Really, her real grandmother is your first wife.
Yeah, well, it wasn't my first wife. I was never married before, but it's my ex-wife.
Right?
Yeah. But that's who
children are. Hold on. I'm trying to get to understand this, because you can give me all this stuff, but if I don't have a framework to stick it into, I can't understand it.
I know.
And we can't spend too much time on it, because we do have another caller, and it's after 12, and I want to get to that last caller.
It's really important to me, though.
It's the question, and then I'll give you some thoughts, and then we could talk about it next week, if you want, or another time. But here's the question. The blood grandmother, which was your first wife, has not voiced an interest in this case, in this situation, correct?
She's been fighting this. She's been fighting this from the beginning, since 13 years ago. She was trying to get custody.
Okay, so she's been trying, but she hasn't gotten it.
Until she manipulated my wife out of my house.
Okay. Where does the daughter want the child to be?
She really has no say in it. She goes along with whatever my ex says. She's been in and out of the hospital. She manipulated her whole life like that. Now she's going to do it to my granddaughter.
Work from here. Here's what I suggest. If you can't reason with the court, or you haven't tried to reason.
I petitioned to the court. The judge didn't want to hear me. She just said, "Oh well, you're here now." And I said, "I want custody of my granddaughter back." And she says, "Oh well, we're just going to continue." She said, "We're going to continue your hearing."
Here's what you can do. Okay, this is what I'll suggest for you to do. Point number one: put down on paper your thoughts and what you think is right. Make it real, though. I mean, you got to force yourself to give the other side something. Listen. Put down on paper what you think should be. Now, you may want to have the custody, and that's fine. You can try to work towards that. But the first order of business is getting an agreement with your ex, okay, on what kind of relationship you both have with that child, and some kind of arrangement with time with that child. And remember, whether they're manipulated or not, the child at a certain point does have a lot to say on where they want to be.
Well,
and,
not in Pennsylvania.
That could be good or that could be bad. Okay.
Right.
The child usually will probably try to pick the parent that they can manipulate the best, you know, the one that they can get more from, because they're children. And that's the nature of man to begin with, is get as much as they can until again, we have to teach our children right from wrong and try to establish a good relationship with them.
John, my wife has MS, okay? She has a problem with cognitive function. My ex just manipulated her out of my marriage. It was marital interference, and it's custodial interference.
It starts off with putting things on a paper and trying to establish what kind of relationship that you can have with your ex so that you can deal with it. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's reality or not. It should be something that's right, that's righteous. Okay?
I'm not going to have a relationship. At this point, I can't with my ex. My ex is going to go to jail. I just need to know where I need to go to get this PFA thrown out. That's all I need to know.
It's a process, though, but look it. First of all, you have to write down what it is you want, let the other side know. That's number one. And you have to do what you think is right. I mean, what's really right, okay? Sometimes you have to suffer a little yourself to get this. That's point number one. Once you do that, Then you moved to get rid of the
John,
cough.
I've been listening to the NLA for a very long time, and every time I try to talk to you about this stuff, you don't know what kind of fortitude or what kind of dignity I have with my family. I do everything for them first. I've done nothing wrong here. Okay?
Right,
every time I ask for advice with you, you don't want
to
give me advice with this. I'm starting to believe that the NLA is wasting my time.
Okay, well, look, you're not listening
I'm
to the
I'm asking
whole...
you how to get this PFA so I could get in contact with my wife to do a marital counseling to try to start working this back out.
That's part of this thing. That's the second part of this thing.
Because
look,
I'm very close to suing this entire county.
Look, when you're ready for me to talk, let me know. Go ahead.
Go ahead, John. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right. Look, first of all, you have to have your mindset, and you have to share that mindset with the other side. Whether they take it, it doesn't matter what they do with it. They can burn it and not even look at it. It's irrelevant.
Absolutely.
It's establishing
right.
a position. That's what I'm saying. Number
right.
one. And it's got to be a righteous position, okay? For instance, I was talking with an individual. They both want the child. It's their child, you know, their mom and dad, and everything else. And I said, well, look, here's what's right. The child must have access to both parents, and they deserve the bare minimum 50-50, bare minimum. Sometimes one parent can only take 30% to 20%. That's between them. You got to work that out. Now, if you're looking to get custody, that's fine. First, you have to establish the relationship and what you're thinking. And if you want to take custody, you got to make sure that you're offering the other side the opportunity for all the visitation or weekends or, you know, actually they deserve 50% as much as you get 50%, sharing it back and forth, however that could work. But that's where it starts, number one. To establish that kind of a layout of your plan and putting it on paper and sharing it, then the next thing to do is get the court out of the picture. You do that by challenging the jurisdiction of that court. That's where it starts.
Okay.
Now, by challenging the jurisdiction, it may take a little time because you got to move it up line because they're going to want to try to keep jurisdiction. Family court is part of the state court. They're overseas. They operate under the auspices of the state court. Okay.
Right.
So that's where it would go to challenge jurisdiction. It has to be decided in that court. Now, if that court does not give you that, if that court does not acknowledge the fact that that court doesn't truly have jurisdiction over you, you have the papers have to be written right. We've got those papers on our page. You can take them and use them, okay? And then if they don't do the right thing, which is agreeing with you, they don't have jurisdiction because they don't, okay? Then if they don't acknowledge that and shut that court down, of course, she may try to move it under the court, do different things, but that's another story. If they don't do the right thing, you then got to move it into federal court for cause.
That's and what I'm looking at, too. John, I don't want to keep you too long because I know you got another caller. I just want to get to one point quick, okay? I called her attorney. I said, I want my three counseling sessions. She said, I don't know how you're going to do that with a PFA, right? So I was in PFA court. I went in. I told the judge, you can't get this on me because I've done nothing wrong. I said, in your own statute, say that you don't have this, 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 and this.
But you shut it down with challenging jurisdiction. It takes it away. The PSA is gone.
So can I file back to this PFA court? Can I file back and challenge jurisdiction?
When you challenge jurisdiction, it shuts everything down. The end results of challenging jurisdiction is you win, they lose because they don't have it, okay?
But I just want you to understand what happened. I want you to understand what happened. I went in there. She couldn't put the PFA on me, and she knew it. So what she did was she said, okay, I'm just going to continue it till August then. And my custody hearing was May 14th. So she continued it to hold me under a temporary PFA all this while now.
Yeah, I understand that. Look, it's abusive. There's only one thing you could – there's two things you could do. You should do number one first is challenge that jurisdiction, okay?
Okay.
Now, you got to understand. You need to understand they don't have jurisdiction over you. You have to understand that, not just understand
right.
the words by saying they don't have jurisdiction. No, you have to be able to
right.
express and explain
right.
it, okay? That comes from learning, so you need to learn, and that's taught on that page. You know, you'll get all the process, all the information there by reading through this stuff carefully and absorbing it. You'll come to an understanding of that. But the thing is, when you challenge jurisdiction,
right.
when you challenge the jurisdiction, it is incumbent upon that court
right.
to move it into the next court up, which is the court that it has that they're under the auspices of, which is the state court. In other words, a judge in that state court. It must be moved into that. And you could probably even go into the court and talk to some judge there and say, I want a hearing concerning, you know, this or so on, you know, as far as for jurisdiction, and I want it to be heard. But there's a good likelihood that the state court is going to decide. 99% of the time, I would imagine, you know, but it's going to be high. State that this family court does have jurisdiction over you. That's an error. You could do one of two things. You can move it into the appellate process or move it straight into federal court. You want to get this done with? I'd move it straight into federal court for cause.
I know you're not a fan of
down from there.
I know you're not a fan of 14th Amendment here, okay? But I believe that the state constitution says that parents have a fundamental liberty interest in care and custody and control of their children, okay? Also, according to the due process, according to the due process, the due process clause 14th Amendment, okay? It says that parents have the heightened protection against government interference, okay? And so I don't understand that. Like, does that fall into the jurisdiction situation?
Well, look, you can use that if you want to fight. The question is, do you want to fight or do you want to win?
I want to win. I definitely want to win. But the thing is,
if you bring that into that court that seems to want to hold jurisdiction and hold you into a certain position with this PSA that you don't want to be involved with, okay, so now you think that court's going to all of a sudden overrule itself and change everything?
Well, no, but, you know, according to Troxell versus Granville, I mean, they don't have the jurisdiction.
But who cares about what one court says about another? Look, at the United States Supreme Court rulings and all these things, they're all good for establishing the meaning of things, okay, or to force something that is just, okay? You can use it for that. But to try to make a decision, for them to try to make a decision using another court case in order to interpret your court case, that's wrong. And we don't even do that, okay? Just the meaning of words we do it for.
Well, Don, I have a lot of stuff against this county and the different players in the county, and I do want to file suit, and I've already put myself in bankruptcy and everything else, and I'm moving all my assets, and I'm getting rid of everything. Here they ruined my business. They're trying to take my house, and I'm not going to go. I don't have nothing else to lose, John. I'm fighting them. I want to sue them.
I understand what you're saying, but bear in mind, and don't take this wrong, all of the details doesn't help to deal with your case. There's only you got to use the law to enforce the law, and the bottom line is they don't have jurisdiction. Enforce that, then you've taken away your whole problem, and now you're going to deal with your ex concerning how this process is going to go. Now you could move it, and again, by putting this stuff on paper, establishing it as early as possible, making it just, a real just piece of paper on how a relationship could be, how it could possibly work out between the two of you, because you both want the same
thing. So what do I title that? Do I send it to the court?
Then you could move it into a real court of record and establish what is right, and force the establishment of that righteousness on to your ex, okay? But you have to be able to, with this case, you're going to have to do something in the courts to make it happen. But you've got to use courts properly, okay? And again, you could try moving it into a court under a court of record, and if they try to make a summary judgment, and the summary judgment goes along with what you're looking to have done, well, then, hey, don't say nothing. Go forward because you got your decision there. Of course, if it goes in opposition, well, look, at you don't have the power and the authority to make a summary judgment.
Because I've been dealing with, I'm a victim here, and I want recourse or remedy. That's what I want. I've been dealing with this court since I was 16 years old.
I just told you how to get it. It's a three-step process. Process number one, challenge the jurisdiction.
Okay.
Process number two, establish that fact and move it into the federal court to shut it down if the state court won't shut it down. Once it's shut down, you've already established on paper, which was the very first thing you've done, okay, as early as possible, do it now. Get a copy.
Find an affidavit.
This is how you write. Make it in an affidavit form. Send it to a certified mail. Have someone else mail it and give you an affidavit of service of that paper onto her through the mail, okay? And then now you've established it. You can even file it in the county and file it in the court. What the heck? File in the court you're in also. Say, this is the way I'm going to move it. This is the way it's going to happen. You don't have jurisdiction. I challenge it. Shut it down. Let it be decided. And then you move it to the state court. They might agree with you and shut it down. But if not, you take it into federal court. They have to shut it down because they're not going to get mixed up in this whole thing. And you can push them to follow the law. Again, during this whole process, you better be learning. And so now you're doing that, okay? Now when you get it in and you want to get back custody or at least some custody, now you take it into the state Supreme Court, the state court, and you open a court of record. You need to know how to do that, but you open a court of record and you pursue that paper that you laid out, which works. And you get a jury to get in there and take a look. You got 12 people and they say, oh, yeah, that looks righteous. This guy's doing it right. And we think, yeah, let's do it. You see, now bear in mind the your grandchild's still going to have something to say here, so I don't know how that's going to go. But
that's fine, but that doesn't matter. She's still a child.
I think this last person, it's a quarter after. So
all right, I'll let you go, John. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. But listen, I don't fear these courts. I don't fear these courts. They fear me because I've been in there before.
Start the process,
All right, I will do that. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Okay, last caller, Audrey. Sorry it's taking so long. Audrey, you got it from New York. 585, Audrey from New York. You got the mic, Audrey. Hello, Audrey. We'll probably put Audrey to sleep. Audrey from New York. Going once, Audrey.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go right ahead, Audrey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Dear, I'm sorry. Got a couple questions. Initially, when you started off, you were talking about a court procedural manual. How do you how to gain access to that? And also, you mentioned a dictionary. What type of dictionary? Is that a Webster?
Go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay,
right.
On the blue bar, you will see due process. Click on due process. Read through that page very, very carefully. Okay, read through that page. And when you get to the bottom, after you understand everything on that page, you have to be a premier member. Then you click on the bottom, and as long as you're a premier member, you'll come access into the due process side of things, which all the stuff that we're talking about is there. You can get access to all the pages. In there is a book that I wrote some years back. It's about 180 pages. I will be updating it, but nevertheless, it's a good book to understand how the court works as far as paperwork is concerned, how to move the court, how to deal with the court if someone is the plaintiff and you're the defendant. It'll teach you how to respond to that. If you're the plaintiff and you want to file papers, it'll teach you how to do that. And it gives you all the paperwork. It shows you how to move the court. It gives you some basic understanding of how the court works. It gives you the structure of the New York court. You'll have to look at the structure of your state court. You're in New York anyway, so it'll be the right one for you. But they're close anyway. Every court, every state has a county court. They have a state court. They have the appellate process. There's appellate and court of appeals. And then of course, there's the New York State Supreme Court on the highest level. And then you got the federal courts, and that structure, of course, is the same for all of us, federal districts, circuit courts, and so on. So anyway, all that information is important to know, but you can get that book on that page, and that is called, it's down towards the bottom, it's under downloads, and it's called Court Procedure Book. Now, again, I'll update. That'll be updated in the work that we're doing now in the course and also the book that we're writing. All that'll be in there and updated, and then you'll have access to everything. Now, to become a premium member, it requires just to sign up as a member and being a donator of $5 a month or more, and you're a premium.
Oh, I'm already a member then. Okay. Then the dictionary.
You got three dictionaries in there. You got Brovier's Dictionary, 1856. I got Black's Law, 2nd edition, and Black's Law, 4th edition.
That's all in there. Go online.
You could download them. You just open them up in PDF and then save them to your computer. You own them. You got it.
Oh, okay. All right.
You'll open it up. It's a PDF. You'll open it up and go and save it to your computer and you own it.
Oh,
you know, it's your.
Great. Oh, great. Okay.
All of the footnotes, the civil procedure rules. And we've got maxims of law, a lot of stuff up there that's all downloadable. Just open it up, PDF, save it to your computer, and you can use it. And at the end, once we get the course completed, the book is being written alongside the course, you know, because it's very much the same, but it'll have more stuff in it. Not much more, but more. And at some point, hopefully, the book will get it into production, you know, right after the course is finished, and get it up once we get it out published. Probably, I would try to push it to get it sold for maybe $19.95, which is what most books go for. And this kind of a book usually would probably be a lot more expensive than that. But that book will become a handbook for anybody that wants. You can use that, you can use that as a handbook in court, because you'll be able to get around it and use it as a reference book pretty simply.
Oh, okay. That'll be great. The other question is, where do I find Challenging Jurisdiction? On the same website?
Same page. Everything's under due process. All that stuff that we're talking about is under due process. Instructions and forms and to move your case into the grand jury action, instruction and forms challenging jurisdiction, instructions and forms moving your case to federal court for cause, instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus, and instructions and forms on moving the court for enforcement. You know, a lot of people win a case and they don't know how to push enforcement. So we got all that. We have the downloads. We have memorandums. Now, all these memorandums, it's a lesson in itself, okay? Each one is a chapter in itself, in a sense. It gives you an understanding of the name of the memorandum. You know, memorandum of habeas corpus, it gives you a good understanding of habeas corpus. Memorandum of a court of record, it expresses and explains and defines a court of record. And, you know, all of these memorandums are very important to read and utilize them. You can use them in court. You can attach them to your court papers.
Oh, okay. The other question, when challenging the jurisdiction of the court, does it have to be that person? Could it be a family member? Could it be anybody to represent?
When you challenge the jurisdiction of the court, then you're the person. If you're in the court, whoever's in the court, it's the person that challenges it.
Oh, okay. All right. And common law, common law attorney, how are they educated?
I think common law attorneys, I only know one, or lawyer, shall I say, he's self-educated and also is a bar attorney at the same time. That becomes a problem for him in some cases, I think, because, you know, there are things we could do because we're not lawyers, and they can't really threaten us in the back room as they can lawyers, so sometimes they have a big problem. But look, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, you know, if you're not going to educate yourself, forget about it. It's not going to happen. And educating needs to be educated in the history of our country, the history of common law, and understand how our courts work. That's your major education. And of course, the close relationship you have with God and that understanding and relationship with the Bible, that gives you the most powerful understanding of common law that you can get anywhere is the Bible itself. So, again, you know, it's up to the people to do what they got to do, become educated or remain a slave. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you've answered most of my questions.
Well, appreciate it. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. All right, we've come to the end of our program. We've got everybody in the queue. Sorry we're so late, but it looks like a lot of people did hang in for that. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Let me think if there's anything else coming up between now and then. Well, look, everybody should get involved somehow, even if they're just getting involved by supporting us financially. But you need to get educated. That's how you really get involved. Take our courses. Take our civics course. Understand how we as a people came to where we are today. It explains it very, very clearly. And then, of course, our consent of government course, which lays out both the political and the judicial control that we need to take of our nation. And if we don't do it, then we don't deserve liberty, and you're not going to have it. So, all right. God bless all. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Same time, same place. Good night.